KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
You got your lemon and poultry icing, spread immaculately thin. You got a love that's so enticing, you got a squirm to hold it in. But when the crust getting rocking, you may try to save your cake. But something's got to break. Well, I saw you out on the highway, you had a glass upon your roof. It was a glass of lemon icy, forgotten and aloof. You were driving like a maniac with a need to overtake. You know, something's got to break. Well, it's a fragile world with a beefed up hairdo. Sipping refreshed, pretending not to care. You can free us on control off the roof of a building, but I don't guarantee that you won't get filled in. There's nothing sure, it's just stay turned on. Listen to the choir while you sing your song. Sing your song, yeah, sing your song. But listen to the choir while you sing your song. A couple fewer teeth. Your left eyeball is smarting and you're shaking like a leaf. Well, you bundled into exile on a haunted fire escape. No, something's got to break.
Good evening, everybody. That's Joel Kraft, and you're listening to it on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Something's Got to Break. Wonderful little ditty there from a good friend, Joel Kraft, out there in Kansas City writing good music. We'll hear more from Joel and his gang throughout the program tonight. Before we get ahead of ourselves, though, big thank you to Debbie Johnson, as always. The wonderful Debbie Johnson, Free Range Radio Theater. Great stuff, as always. Bringing it to you 1 hour before this program, 10 p.m. every Monday night, Debbie Johnson does it. Free Range Radio Theater, the best place on the web or on the dial for theater on the radio. Anyway, before that, we also have Kelvin and Jason, Jazz Plus Blues equals Summer Lovin'. I think Eric the Red was sitting in for Jason tonight, as a matter of fact, playing good stuff. But anyway, they're always putting good music together before Debbie's show. Tech Radio gets things going before that. Always keeping us up on the wild and woolly world of high technology. Jeff Wheeler, every Monday afternoon, gets things going 3 o'clock until 5 p.m. with Uncommon Light. Eclectic new edge music. And Jeff's always on top of some great stuff as well as some old ones. So, anyway, good music, good talk, good news, rockin' radio on KOPN, your imagination station, 89.5 FM. Glad to be here with y'all and a part of it. And thanks to everyone who participated, joined in the program last week. Once again, a brain twister from Marco Roden. Mathematics on the edge of what? Hyperspace? I don't know. Truly remarkable work being done by Marco Roden. Now the hard part, the implementation. How do you get this stuff out of Marco's melon onto the blackboard, whether it's a digital blackboard or otherwise, then off the blackboard and into the world? You know, this is the challenge with all of this stuff. You know, Nikola Tesla faced it as well. Wilhelm Reich, Royal Raymond Rife, all these guys, you know. Anyway, let's see what we can do with Marco Roden's work. Amazing stuff. If you missed the program last week, it or any other for that matter, are on the web. You can always hear them after the fact. Just zip on over to my website at www.mikehagan.com. And just go to the program archives and you can listen to any of this stuff, okay? Okay. Let's see. Tonight, Dr. John Sheliak. John was on the program in February, and he'll be back with us in just a bit at the top of the midnight hour. It's going to be awesome, I'm certain. And I know a lot of listeners have been looking forward to hearing Dr. John again, as have I. And so the anticipation is just about over. Dr. John Sheliak in about 55 minutes or so. John and I, since the last program, I think he was on the 27th of February. Actually, let me zip on over to the website here, and we'll see how good I am with the website. But, oh, I take it back, the 26th. Well, technically I'm right, because the show begins on the 26th, and after the midnight hour passes, it becomes the 27th. So John Sheliak was on the program on February 26th/27th. Last February, on the still this year, 2007, and it was a great program and a pleasure and a privilege to have John on the air with me. But since then, we actually have become friends, and John was actually here in town. He was visiting in June, toward the end of June, and he came to our little solstice celebration that we had in Roachport. And it was just an absolute wonderful time. I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit on the air here. But to have John be there and a part of it, and to be not only able to bring him back on the radio to all of you guys and girls, you know, but just to be able to, you know, say that he's a friend of mine is just a huge and wonderful thing that I, you know, probably would not have imagined only a few short years ago. So anyway, John Sheliak, the wonderful John Sheliak, Los Alamos nuclear physicist by day, mystic shaman by night, and just a remarkable person. So he'll be with us in about 50 minutes, okay? All right. Information about John, by the way, on the web at johnsheliak.com. You can link over there from my site, and we've got some pretty interesting imagery to go along with tonight as we're talking, but all that stuff can be linked directly from my site at mikehagan.com. Just scroll down a little bit on the front page there. You'll see a thing that says time wave dilations and an image below that. You can click on either of those things, either the link associated with the time wave text, or you just click on that image there, and it'll take you over to John's site, and there's a whole bunch of stuff over there that we'll be zipping in and about talking about as well. So anyway, that's what's happening tonight. Dr. John Sheliak at the top of the hour. We'll do the usual thing between now and then. Do space weather in a little bit. I'll tell you a little bit about some upcoming guests. I got a funny, funny piece. Something that I don't typically do, but I couldn't help it. I'm going to play an MP3 cut, believe it or not, from Sean Hannity's radio program a couple of days ago. And I know this is out of character, but, you know, it's that good. So anyway, that's all coming up in just a bit here. And, well, I don't know. Like I said, we'll have music from Joel Kraft as well. This guy, Joel Kraft, is from Kansas City. We heard music from a band called The Boon last week. They're also from KC. In fact, I think they share a couple of band members sometimes. Anyhow, I saw Joel here in town a few months back and enjoyed his music. I hope you do too. We started things off with a song called Something's Gotta Break. And we're going to play a couple other quick ones here. We've got a couple short songs here that we can play in a row. Buy me a couple minutes to take care of some business here. We'll play, well, this song is nice. This is called Raisins. And we'll play another track after that called Light My Mind. Both short ones, but good stuff from Joel Kraft that I'm pulling from his CD called Big Ideas, by the way. This was released, I think, last year. I'm guessing 2006. And Blinking Light Records is the label that it's been released under. But anyway, Big Ideas from Joel Kraft. And this song is called Raisins. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
Trips on a thing. I dusted all the rust off, bit through the string. I don't exactly know how I got to be king, but everywhere I go now, they say, hey, what's that thing? wish I knew, because I long for some direction, and I want some clear connection. Mystery is charming as long as you're pretty, but it can be alarming for this little kitty. Power over people, the carnival ride with comforting and lethally narcotic lullabies. The dreams are pretty, but I long for some direction, and I want a real connection. Raisins in my coffee, toothpaste in my hand. Everything's exotic if you know where to stand. But we've been born 200 years more. Shipwrecked on this cold Atlantic shore, and I long for some direction, and I want some clear connection with you, and I want. The days pass slowly in my dark little house, where I try to keep my heart safe from harm. But I remember a time, like a light in my mind, you held me close in your arms. And with everyone I meet, I'm so timid and shy, though I try to compensate with my charms. But I remember a time, like a light in my mind, you held me close in your arms. Sometimes I feel like a walking disaster, and in my heart there's a screaming alarm. But I remember a time, like a light in my mind, you held me close in your arms. Better hang the phone, I've got a long way to walk, and the dark sky is threatening the storm. But I remember a time, like a light in my mind, you held me close in your arms. Sometimes I feel like a walking disaster, and in my heart there's a pounding alarm. But I remember a time, like a light in my mind, you held me close in your arms. Yes, I remember a time, like a light in my mind, you held me close in your arms.
Joel Kraft. Wonderful stuff on KOPN Radio Orbit, 89.5 FM. Mid-Missouri source for in-depth news, diverse talk, music of the world. And you're listening to it every Monday from 11 until 2 p.m. From 11 until 2 a.m. We do it on the program here. Radio Orbit comes to you 3 hours live on KOPN through the traditional airwaves on 89.5 FM. And we also broadcast a show over the Internet these days, a live stream from the website at kopn.org. Just click on the Listen Live button once you get over to the website, and you can listen to the radio program from anywhere on the planet as long as you get an Internet connection, okay? All right, thanks to everyone, by the way, who makes that happen, live on the radio and on the net, everyone at KOPN, And I don't know, whoever's keeping the whole communications infrastructure together, thanks. I appreciate it. You know, we take a lot of that for granted, but it's a good thing that the stuff still works, you know. Anyway, thanks to everybody who makes it happen. I appreciate it. Larry, or speaking of people, I should say, that make things happen, my wonderful friend Larry Noriger, the wonderful web wizard, back with us and helping out, as always. Thanks to everybody else out there who's sending music, art, poetry, wonderful stuff. I've got some new stuff in the Poets Corner, and if you zip on over there, you can read it. And if you like it, share it with other people, okay? Regardless, send it to me. Send more, more, more. We love it. We'll find a place for it on the web, on the website, and we'll share it with other people, okay? Check it out. Let me know what you think. Just go on over to the site at MikeHagan.com. You'll have access to everything we're doing over there. No secret passwords or funky registration or any of that stuff. Just go snoop around, and whatever's there is yours for sharing, okay? There is also a forum that's always interesting and sort of active these days, a bulletin board of sorts, interesting topics being discussed over there all the time, and I always put in my two cents and lots of other people as well. The chat room is live and active right now. I should go over there and see who's over there, but I'm sure there's some folks over there that are listening to the program. Hello to everybody. I'll zip in there as soon as we take another break here. I should have done it at the last break, but my friend Will walked in the door and I had something else to do.
Hi, Radio.
There he is again, of course. He's, you know, the background man, I guess I should say. He's like the smoking man on the X-Files. You know, he's just sort of... He's much more benign than that, but... I digress. Anyway, the chat is up and active. We'll be peeking in there for questions and comments. I always encourage my guests as well as listeners to participate over there in the chat room during the program, during the live broadcast, and in the forum during the week, you know, in between the shows. There's always a lot going on in there. So if you want to get in touch with me directly, email address, orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, orbitradio@AOL.com. You can send me email. I know my guests and the musicians that appear on the program also love to hear from y'all. So don't be shy. If you got good things to say, bad things to say, whatever, share it with us. And, you know, we try to make it easy. On the web, MikeHagan.com. And the phone number here in the studio during the breaks, 573-874-5676. And if we decide to take phone calls on the air later during the program with Dr. John, that number is 573-443-8255. Okay, 20 after the hour. Upcoming guests tonight, as I said, Dr. John Sheliak. New information on the time wave that you know, is a hobby of his and something that he's been working on for many, many years, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the time wave and some of the things that John has teased out of it over the last, well, I won't say how long the time period has been. He's been working on it for decades now, but anyway, he's got some real cool stuff that's up on the web, and we'll be looking at some of that imagery as well, and he can try to walk us through some of it and tell us, you know, what this whole thing is about, you know, as far as he can tell at least, and all of us are sort of, you know, swinging the bat these days, trying to figure out what the hell is happening on this planet. So anyway, John's opinion is one that I think is worthy to be listened to. So we'll do that with John Sheliak in just about 40 minutes at the top of the hour. For those of you who aren't familiar with Dr. Sheliak, you know, he's got the regular degrees and all that too. He's, you know, he has some unique and independent thoughts for sure, and he acts upon them, as he should. But, you know, he's also, you know, recognized by many peers in his field as a, you know, a very accomplished individual with a great degree of intellectual capacity and, you know, a great background and track record of work in nuclear physics. You know, he works for Los Alamos during the day. And he's an amazing guy and someone who we're really fortunate to have on the air with us tonight. So anyway, Dr. John Sheliak in just a little while here, about 35 minutes. Next week, the 6th of August, a name you're probably not familiar with, but one you will be familiar with. His name is Boyd Graves. Boyd Edward Graves. And he's a doctor, as a matter of fact. Not a physician doctor, a juris doctorate. He's a lawyer. And we're going to talk about AIDS and the HIV virus. And we're going to talk about where it came from and how it came from there and who was involved in where it came from and what we can do to resolve it. And it's a big deal. what we're going to be talking about next week. Maybe the biggest program I've ever done. So we'll tip the whole thing off now and make sure that, you know, you all check out Boyd Graves, even if we end up not doing the program for any reason. But I can't imagine why we wouldn't do that. I expect to be here next Monday, as always, and I expect Boyd Graves to be on the phone with me. There is one thing that I will mention now that I'd like all of you to do between now and then. I want you to go to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and I want you to look up U.S. Patent number 5676977. All right? 5676977. There for all you to see. All right? On the 13th of August, G. Edward Griffin, of course, the author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, the seminal work on the Federal Reserve. We'll talk about the Fed and what's happening over there with Mr. Ben Bernanke and the clowns that run that supposedly American institution. On the 20th of August, the birthday show. Yeehaw! 3 years on the air, Radio Orbit, can you believe it? And still breathing. That's right. August 20th, we'll do it up. We'll have a party here at the radio station. We'll have a bunch of live musicians. We'll have a bunch of live people, folks, running around, having a good time. And we'll talk with y'all. And if you're out there listening to the program, this is hereby your invite. If you're a listener to the radio program and you can make it down to KOPN at 915 East Broadway, downtown Columbia, Missouri, right here on top of the Dalton Building, just come on up and you'll be welcome to join the fray. All right, that's on the 20th of August. Listen to what else is going on this summer, all right? I mean, check it out. We're sort of booked up through the summer, but I think you'll appreciate the people that are coming. John Major Jenkins on August 27th. Susan Renison, the woman who wrote Tuning the Diamonds, really interesting book about planetary evolution. So Susan Renison on the 3rd of September. Kent Daniel Benkowski will do a special on 9/11 like we always do. Bruce Raphael and Rush Allen on the 17th of September. Brian Trent. Remember Brian Trent? He wrote Remembering Hypatia. This is one of the most amazing books that's been written in the last couple of years as far as I'm concerned. It's called Remembering Hypatia. It's about Hypatia of Alexandria, a woman, one of the most remarkable women in the history of Western civilization, and one who very few people are familiar with. Namely, because she was removed from the historical record by the Vatican after she was murdered by the same gang. And, in fact, the guy that was in charge basically of having her torn to bits, you know, a rabid gang of who knows what, you know, just freaks in the early years of the 5th century. This is about 408, I think, is when Hypatia was murdered, in a church, by the way. This guy's name, what the hell was the guy's name? Not Cyrus. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's a saint now.
Check the chat room, man.
Yeah, somebody probably knows. Anyway, the guy was canonized not too long after that. But at any rate, Remembering Hypatia is an amazing book. And if you don't know who she is, Hypatia was the last living librarian of the Library of Alexandria. She was considered, in all of Europe, the most intelligent and compassionate, brilliant women in all of Europe. There's this remarkable painting by the wonderful Renaissance artist named Raphael, and I'm sure many of you out there have seen, you know, Raphael's work if you've been to Florence or if you've been to Rome. Anyway, the Italian Renaissance artist Raphael, one of his most notable works is a painting. It's called The School of Vienna. And it depicts all of the great minds of Europe who met in the very early 5th century in Athens. I'm sorry, it's called The School of Athens, not The School of Vienna. And they all met in Athens, Greece. And I mean, this was, you know, it was a meeting of the minds of, for the most part, the known world at the time. And guess what? There were some 200 and some odd men there, and there was one woman, Hypatia of Alexandria, and she was there not as a librarian. She was there with the utmost of respect from all of her peers.
Scholar.
Yeah, as a scholar. And she was actually a physician, a doctor. She was a naked-eye astronomer who could you know, talk just as easily about precession of the equinoxes as she could about, you know, the human physiology.
I bet she was hot too.
Oh, and well, I mean, the depictions of her in Raphael's painting are actually very attractive, I think. But anyway, this is a woman who should be remembered. And Brian Trent wrote this great book, Remembering Hypatia. And we'll talk with Brian in September of, I'm sorry, on the 24th of September. He's written another book. I don't even know what his new book is. I'm so excited about the old one. But whatever, we'll talk about it because Brian's got my respect, and I can't wait to talk with him again. All right, Dennis McKenna, October 1st. Dr. Dennis and I chatted over the weekend, and he may be in Peru. I don't think so. Even if he's in Peru, we'll try to work it out. But I think October 1st, we can at least pencil that one in for Dr. Dennis McKenna. Bruce Lipton on the 15th of October. So there's not a whole lot of room in between, but I'm real excited about the schedule for the rest of the summer, and maybe somehow, some way, we'll figure out a way to get on the air more often. I don't know how that'll ever happen, but for now, that's what it is, and I hope you all come along for the ride, okay? All right, what's up? Announcements, what do I want to talk about? Well, I was in West Virginia for a few days, and the only reason I mention it is because it just deserves to be mentioned. My father-in-law, his family, is from this part of the country, you know, Hill Country, West Virginia. And there's a very interesting and strange thread that runs through his side of the family, namely the Poe ancestry line. And by Poe, I mean as in Edgar Allan. Edgar Allan Poe was Ashley's great-great-great uncle, I think. I mean, it's something like that, or cousin. But at any rate, Edgar Allan Poe.
Here's the thing, though. If it's a Poe, it doesn't really matter.
Well, I mean, trust me, man. You're right. I mean, because Edgar's still with us, in Uncle Bucky and Billy Joe Jim Bob and Grandpa Joe Pete. I mean, trust me, the Poe line is strong. And this is a strange gang, but they're very. I mean, Jeffy the Goat Faced Boy. You know. I mean, what a scene I had here in West Virginia. It was incredible, but I had a great time, and they're one, actually, I jest a little bit, but great, great stuff and great family, and actually went to the graveyards, though, you know, and saw all the ancestors, and it's remarkable. You know, now it's not just the Pope, it's the Poes and the Thackers and the Fergusons. And
everybody got ancestors.
Yeah, everybody does. And anyway, so that was a remarkable time for me, and I had a great time. My sons got to see that part of the country for the first time and got to meet some people, parts of the family that they probably wouldn't have had a chance to meet otherwise. And anyway, we're back here in Roachport and Columbia, but had a wonderful time, and I appreciate all the effort that the people who put the reunion together went to, and had just a great time, and we'll try to do it again next year. Okay, so let's see. Okay, I'm going to do this now. Let's see if I can do this on the fly. I need to get Winamp open here, and then I'm going to play a clip for you. I don't normally do this, but this is just my friend Johnny, who's a cab driver in Denver. You know, when he calls me and tells me that something's hot, I got to pay attention, and he sent this to me and just blew me away. So normally I don't have any interest in Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh or any of these guys, but I got one here that I got to share with you. Let's see if I can find it. Okay. So this is from, I think, the 18th of July on the Sean Hannity Show. All right? A clever fella slips one past the screener, okay? And this is a big deal. Listen to it. It speaks for itself, and I'll talk a little bit more about it in a minute. Okay, check this out. Again, this is from the 18th of July on the Sean Hannity radio program. If you don't know who he is, well, you know, just figure it out.
Kylan is in San Diego, KFMB. One week from tomorrow, we'll be there. Hey, Kylan, how are you?
Hey, Hannity. I'm doing awesome. How you doing?
All right, man. What's going on?
Man, let me first say that you are a great American.
Thank you.
And thank you for exercising your First Amendment rights
well,
on the radio.
I hope I see you out there a week from tomorrow.
Oh, awesome. You wait, is it going to be the Freedom Concert?
Freedom Concert, 1 week from tomorrow.
Oh, man, I got to look into that. Anyways, I just wanted your take on an interesting bit of news about the second quarter presidential campaign numbers. I was looking at the numbers from the Federal Election Commission's website, and of course, the Republican Party has a lot more contributions from the U.S. military servicemen and veterans than the Democrats. So
that's an interesting observation. They break it down that way? I didn't know that.
They don't break it down, but you can go and look at it yourself and look at the contributions from employers and
People
open up the numbers.
So in other words, they say the United States military.
Right.
You know, I haven't met one guy in the military I know that say, yeah, I want Hillary as my commander-in-chief. I haven't heard that.
Anyway, so you know which party they're supporting, but Sean, this was interesting. Do you know who got the most donations out of any candidate from military servicemen and veterans?
Who's that?
Take a guess.
I don't know.
This is going to shock you. It was actually Congressman Ron Paul. He got even more than McCain.
I'd be surprised. Look, Congressman Paul's not going anywhere. I mean, if are you a Congressman Paul supporter, sir?
I'm still weighing things out, but I think he's an interesting man.
Look, I agree with him on. I think he's wrong, dead wrong on the most significant issue of our time. And I thought Rudy, slapped him down pretty good at that debate. Boy, the Ron Paul supporters though are still ticked off about it. Anyway, quick break, right back. We'll get to your phone calls. 800-941 Sean is our toll free telephone number.
All right, so there you have it. Now I played the whole clip to give old Hannity a break because he did try to handle it like a man. But it was brilliant. The guy swings the Ron Paul hammer, and then goes Mr. Nice Guy. So Hannity had no other option but to be nice too, and then slither off to a break. only a tired out Giuliani reply. Giuliani, have you seen Giuliani? Have you seen that guy lately? He looks like Grandpa Munster. He'll be lucky to make it to the elections, I think. I don't know, but anyway, that was sweet. Poor little neocon wiener dog Hannity. Listen to that thing again. I'll put it up on the forum. Listen closely. I think you can hear his creepy fascist bosses calling him. Sean.
Let the marketplace of ideas.
Oh, Sean. You've been bad. What are we going to do with you, Sean? Here's an idea. How about get his lame ass show off the air? How about that? Anyway, way to go, guy. Whoever that was, it was awesome. Get used to it. People are realizing it ain't all that hard to punch through this crap. You know, the screener business is a big deal. These guys make sure that whoever is going to show up on the air with Rush or Hannity, and including the people on the left who do the same thing, because none of them have the balls to just pick up the phone and talk to whoever's on the other end of it. Because they know that they can't answer the questions, the hard ones. But anyway, this guy was sharp, and he slipped one through, so good for him. And get used to it, folks out there. And, you know, I sort of walk the walk. I don't take calls very often. But you know what? When I open the phone lines, nobody calls.
Mike Gravel was good about it.
Yeah, Gravel was cool. Wills here interviewed Mike Gravel, a Democrat presidential candidate.
He admitted to using cocaine at a dinner party with me. And I respect that.
Well, he didn't use cocaine at the dinner party with you.
Well, yeah.
All right. We got to move along here. But at any rate, maybe this will get Ron Paul on the program. I've been trying to get him to appear on Orbit, but I can't get his press guy Jesse Benson or Jesse Benton to return any of my phone calls. Maybe a few of y'all ought to send this to Mr. Benton, see if we can get his attention. All right. Anyway, this was great. All right, let's take a breather. Here's a good one for Sean and his gang. It's another one from Joel Kraft. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. This one's called Teacher Showed Up to Learn.
Someone else. La la la. this classroom free. Illuminate what not good.
Everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. That was a song called Teacher Showed Up to Learn. Joel Kraft is the artist in question. The name of his disc is called Big Ideas. Last year, released on Blinking Light Records. Same label as The Boon from last week that we played, and I didn't do it on purpose, but... No, but they're both great, and I really like both of these bands. And anyway, glad to share the music with y'all. I'll have to. I haven't really actually talked to either one of these bands personally. I sent them notes and told them that that I was going to play their stuff, but you know how that whole thing goes. So anyway, it's good stuff, and it's local, regional music coming from Kansas City, and I appreciate it. Thanks for sharing it with us. Okay, all right, let's see. On the web, I should actually mention that. I think Joel Kraft is at joelkraft.net, and you can also find him on MySpace. And if you go to my music archives after the program tonight, sometime within the next day or two, you'll be able to find information about Joel. And, of course, any of the other musical acts and performers that appear on the program here. All right? Okay. Space weather. On Wednesday... July 25th at approximately 10 p.m., actually 10 a.m. Greenwich time, a quote-unquote major daylight fireball tore across the skies of Slovenia, Croatia, and Italy, reports veteran meteor observer Jure Atanakov of Maribor, Slovenia. It produced two bright flashes that reached an estimated magnitude of minus 20 and also a number of loud sonic booms. In plain English, you guys, that means that minus 20, the further you go to the minus side when you talk about things astronomical, that means the brighter they are. That's 500 times brighter than a full moon.
But minus 20 from the sun, right?
Well,
is that the basis of the measurement?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so... There are people that are reporting still about this. It just happened on the 25th, but lots of interesting stuff coming out of that. So, you know, as I always tell you, it's not the ones you know about. It's the ones that you don't know about. I go to this thing on spaceweather.com. They have a listing at the bottom of their main page, and it says potentially hazardous asteroids. We call them PHAs. And they have a whole list of them, and they have dates, of when their near approaches to Earth are going to come. And they usually go out, you know, the next 30 days, and they'll list any asteroids or, you know, rocks that are flying around out there that they know about. This is, of course, the caveat. and when they're going to zip by the Earth. Well, I mean. The ones on their chart are the ones that they know about. Those aren't the ones that you have to worry about. The ones you have to worry about
Of the other 99.99% of them that are flying around that just zipped by on the 25th. Now, hold on. My friend Will wants to say something here. What mic is that? 3, 4? Try that. Say hi.
Hey.
Yeah.
So there's a prescient saying about that, and that it's if you hear the sound of a mosquito buzzing, then this is a male mosquito, right? And this is not the same mosquito that actually bites you and sucks your blood. And so if you hear the sound of a male mosquito buzzing at night, and you know, you don't have to worry about that. However, if you don't hear the sound of a mosquito buzzing, then there might be a female. And that is something you need to worry about, because that's the one that bites you.
There you go. In a nutshell, from Will. All right. On July 30th, today, through the 10th of August, the Conference on Dark Matter, From the Cosmos to the Laboratory in Menlo Park, California. That'll be an interesting one, I'm sure. July 31st, Comet 95P Chiron, closest approach to Earth. You know, we always have the comets and asteroids swooping by here, and just mentioned once in a while. The Alpha Capricornid meteor shower is going to peak tomorrow, as a matter of fact, on the 1st of August. Alpha Capricornid meteor shower. That means it comes from the direction of Capricorn in the sky. Look for that constellation. Go out at early in the morning, 4 or 5 a.m. August 2nd, the 40th anniversary, 1967, of Lunar Orbiter 5, the launch of Lunar Orbiter 5, 1967. That was 2 years, essentially, before the moon landing in 69. August 3rd through the 5th, the symposium, Cosmos in the Classroom, 2007, Teaching Introductory Astronomy to Non-Science Majors. There you go, in Claremont, California. That'll be a blast. What else? August 4th through 5th. Oh, I mentioned this one only because of the previous BOLIDE event, the summer meeting of the Forum of Croatian Astronomers. That's in Split, Croatia, August 4th and 5th. They'll have plenty to talk about with that big old fireball that just zipped over their country a couple of days ago. All right, I'm going to take one more quick one here, get John Sheliak on the line, come back, mention a couple things in the news probably, and then we will do it up with John. All right? All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. This one is called Catalpas. Joel Kraft, KOPN Columbia.
Holding their China to the light. Walking home every day on a sunshine day, you are high on the light and you walk upright. Come far, come near through the atmosphere. Colors, 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 colors. Blue, yellow, green, gray, orange like a tangerine. Lemon brown sparkle on a windshield arc of a rainbow. Galvanized fence post, brick, shadow grass, flower porch, puddle, asphalt, grass. But Catalpas blossom wonder white. China to the light. You've got your head screwed on right. With plum and coconut delight. And the music of feet on a butter yellow seat of a blonde Cadillac by a barn red shack. And the voice of a girl as she dips and twirls. Chanting, 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 chanting. Nonsense cities full of infinite. And her hands full of dimes to accompany her rhymes. And the screen door slams, mother keys in her hand. Put your seatbelt, she's there while over. Catalpas blossom wonder white. Holding their China to the light. You've got your head screwed on right. With plum and coconut delight. Yes, the catalpas blossom wonder white. Holding their China to the light. You've got your head screwed on right. With plum and coconut tea. With plum and coconut tea. With plum and coconut tea.
little bit of a tight one there, but we made it back to you. It's Mike, this is Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's about 11:52 or so in the PM now on the 30th of July, 2007. Cruising right along. We'll be talking about that tonight, time, as it were, with Dr. John Sheliak, who has now been safely secured aboard the always questionable technological vehicle of communication that we use here when I get these people on the phone from who knows where. But sometimes it's real easy, and sometimes it ain't. Either way, Dr. John's with us. We'll have him in just about 7 or 8 minutes, okay? All right, what else did I want to say about things in the sky? Sky notes. Venus is about 10% full now. If you go out right around setting sun time, get your binoculars out, you'll see Venus either way, up and above to the left of the setting sun. It'll be the brightest thing in the sky that time of night. But if you actually look at Venus with a small telescope or binoculars, you can actually see that it, you know, will actually appear as a crescent, just like the moon does, depending on where it is in its cycle. The moon, by the way, is full tonight. John will be interested in that. I'm sure he probably knows it. But anyway, full moon tonight, tomorrow, I guess. And anyway, right about sunset, look at Venus, and if you got binoculars or a scope, you'll see about 10% of a crescent up there. It's about 7 degrees above the horizon right around sunset, if you can see it, okay? All right, on the 31st of July, that's tomorrow, you'll see Jupiter in the southern sky, probably the most prominent thing out there in the southern sky. It's about, I don't know, if you hold your hand up, maybe 2 or 3 fingers above the star Antares, which is in the constellation Scorpio. Mars is rising about 4.5 hours after sunset right now, and you'll be able to see the Milky Way, you know, just stretching out overhead after dark. If you see that band right above you, the Milky Way band, that's the bright strip of stars that'll be directly above you this time of year. Go to the Scorpion, you know, the constellation Scorpio, and from there you'll see Cassiopeia up in the northeast, and they call this thing the Summer Triangle. So anyway, that's what's happening up there in the stars above your heads, and we'll do it again next week. Space Weather, as always, on the web at spaceweather.com, and you can always find interesting things over there at Kent Stedman's site. I actually should go over there because I know that there was something that struck me when I went to Kent's site earlier today, but it sort of escapes me right now. At any rate, what's in the news? Destruction of viruses via visible light pulses. That's an interesting story. Go to my forum and you'll find all this stuff posted there. There's a great story and image of Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, with Nikola Tesla that Kent dug up in Tesla's lab in the early 1900s. I mean, this is unbelievable. Classic. Mark Twain had a tremendous interest in Nikola Tesla's work, actually. And somebody else put up a real cool link about those Chinese pyramids that Bruce Raphael was talking about and that he's been investigating. But you, on Google Earth, you can actually zoom right down on these things. It is outrageous. And I don't know if it'll let me, for whatever reason, it won't let me link up. But I'll have all these things posted for you. Just go over to the forum at MikeHagan.com, and you can see all this stuff for yourself, this and a bunch of other interesting news stories that people have posted up there on the forum. All right? Okay, let's take another quick one here. We'll come back with John Sheliak, Dr. John Sheliak, right at the top of the hour, okay? It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. And this is Joel Kraft. Once again, the song is called E-O-W. All right, thanks again, everyone, for bearing with me there. We'll come back with Dr. John in just a few. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. At the end.
To Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan on KOPN 89.5 FM.
That's right, everybody. It is Mike Hagan. You're listening to it on Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest tonight, so happy and pleased to have Dr. John Sheliak, nuclear physicist, mathematical genius, one of the grandfathers of the time wave theory, teased out of the I Ching 36 years ago by our friend and ancestor these days, Terence McKenna, among other things. John Sheliak's involved in, well, we're going to let him tell us about it. He was on the program back in February, and it's great to have him back tonight. So without further delay, hello and welcome back to Radio Orbit, John Sheliak. Hi, John.
Hi, Mike. It's good to hear your voice again.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
The pleasure is mine.
Well, you know, it's funny because I had I put on a piece of music when I was calling you, and I had 2 minutes and 26 seconds, and I got you at the 16-second mark.
Ah.
And it's like, man, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to get it worked, but it did. So here we are.
16-167, numerologically.
There it is, the lucky number 7 again. So, all right, well, for the folks who are not so familiar with Dr. John Sheliak, please do a little bit of background, just enough to get things going here, and let people know a little bit about you, who you are, where you came from, and why they should be interested in listening to us chat tonight.
Well, let's leave the reasons for listening to us up to your listeners, actually.
Okay.
But educated in Michigan, undergraduate, graduate school, nuclear science, ultimately. Did work with time-of-flight neutron diffraction, plasma physics. Did a lot of initial work in fusion energy with plasma physics. Currently, I actually work in Los Alamos for a program. It's called HAPL, which is High Average Power Laser. It's essentially a program that's set up to develop, or actually to design and build a fusion power plant and look at and take a look at all the outstanding engineering and physics issues that have to be resolved before such a plant can be built.
Mm-hmm. And this is hot fusion, right?
Hot fusion,
yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's taking a very high energy laser or particle beam energy and compressing and heating small fuel pellets, or they're actually small spheres, to very high temperatures, compressing it so you get the atoms close together. Temperature simply means lots of kinetic energy, so when you've got these things flying around, get them close enough, they bang into one another. With enough energy, they fuse, kick out energy, and create helium in the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Essentially what we imagine happens on the sun, right?
Right.
Wow. Wow. Hmm. Well, can you tell us a little bit about the status of that work?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. You know, a lot of it's, of course, political. You know, we're pouring so much money elsewhere in the Middle East, Far East, that funding has been an issue. But currently, there's an experiment that's actually being prepared at Livermore in Northern California, which is, you know, another major national laboratory.
Right.
They have a fusion call, a program that's called NIF, which is National Ignition Facility. And what that is being built to do is to achieve ignition, which means, you know, getting gain or much more energy out than you put in the form of laser light. That particular experiment seems to be getting pushed back year by year. It may end up falling on somewhere in 2012. You know, the rate things are going. That would be interesting. You know, if it happened to happen around December 2012.
You said that a lot of it's political. Do you think that there are forces at work that realize that we're very close? Maybe this isn't even the only area, but we're close to "quote unquote free energy" that would, you know, free up a lot of people.
It's possible. I mean, you know, look, you know, as a culture, we have habits. You know, we form habits and we stick to habits, and especially those in power who want to sort of maintain a set, you know, status quo and keep things kind of, you know, supportive of what type of lifestyle and world that they envision for themselves. But, you know, the bottom line is that we're all, you know, living on planet Earth, and energy needs are going to, you know, are increasing dramatically, and we'll have to find some reasonable solution to the energy problem, as well as other problems that we're going to be facing. And, you know, so at some point we're going to have to pull together and basically shed our personal biases and tastes and say, okay, we've got to solve these problems. Let's work together and do it while we still can.
Right. I mentioned just a few minutes ago this great photo that Kent put up of Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, in Nikola Tesla's lab. And I think about the work that Tesla, you know, was doing 100 years ago and You know, he had ideas of free energy and even, you know, potentially a way to do it, and yet here we are burning dead animals and plants still, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, old habits die hard, and you know, of course, for me, it's always how one defines free energy.
But nothing's free, first of all.
Yeah, well, you know, the cosmos itself, and I think I mentioned this on a chat room a couple of weeks ago, basically, you know, the reason that we have a cosmos as it exists because we have free energy. You know, the cosmos is actually in its present form because of what is actually called free energy. And it's simply energy that results from the fact that the potential entropy, you know, available in the cosmos is much greater than what is actually actualized. And that difference turns out to be the energy that was necessary to create the cosmos that we see. Of course, people are talking about the zero-point field and the enormous amounts of latent energy available there. So, you know, I think what it comes down to, Mike, you know, I never thought that fusion would be the ultimate source of energy. For me, it was something that would be stopgap in the interim, and that, you know, we're really rapidly reaching a place, I think, as a civilization where, you know, I mean, there are going to be advances in technology, but technology as it exists has taken us almost as far as it can, in my view. And the next, you know, step that the civilization is going to have to take is going to be one of consciousness, expansion of consciousness. You know, and that's likely to lead all kinds of new perspectives and energy forms, et cetera, et cetera. And I think when you talk about free energy, that's what I think. You know, can we really learn, can our consciousness expand to the degree where we can actually learn to tap, you know, the quantum field or
and handle it.
Exactly. Well, that's the whole point. You know, I mean, basically you have to be mature enough to be able to do that.
Right.
You know, and move beyond this whole ethic of manipulation, control, death dealing to something that's very, very different. And I think there are built-in, you know, inhibitions in the evolutionary process that prevent civilizations from getting too far too fast. I mean, it sometimes seems like we have now, but, you know, compared to what's likely available for us down the road with an expansion in consciousness that precludes the use of that kind of awareness and power in any self-serving or destructive way, you know, there's going to be a lot more available.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think about, you and I were chatting a little bit off the air about this, but the fact that nuclear weapons were developed nearly 70 years ago now, you know, certainly 60.
Mm-hmm. And
and
70, yeah.
Right, and of course, you know, we all know the history and that they have been used before, but it seems that something has held things in check for 5 going on 6 decades now.
Mm-hmm.
And I find myself asking the same as my friend Kent, you know, something is holding this thing together. I'm no longer that interested in who's going to blow it apart. I'm very interested in the question of what or who is holding this whole thing together.
Well, because, exactly. You know, I mean, I think one has to look at, then when we look step back and say, okay, what do you think the nature of the cosmos is and existence is? And, you know, my perspective, and I've put these expressions on my website and, you know, and repeated it to others a number of times that, you know, we're part of a larger process at work, an evolutionary process. You know, and I think Terence was certainly aware of this. And, you know, it's something that he affirmed over and over. And this larger process at work, this evolutionary process, is carrying all of us along with it. Now, you know, we can either choose to participate in it and willingly or resist, you know, and try to buck it at our own peril. But, you know, there's something, I think, extraordinary happening in the cosmos that's unfolding. It's part of this evolutionary process. It's carrying us with it, you know. And, you know, I don't think that we as civilization get, you know, to buck that, resist that, you know, indefinitely without consequences.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think we're getting closer and closer to payday or to pay up day, whatever, depending on what side of the coin you're on, sort of.
But you also have increasingly, I mean, there are large numbers of people, although you don't see this in the press, you know, or hear it on the reports, but you know, you certainly report some of it. I mean, an increasingly large number of the people who are really about making a conscious effort to participate in this and become part of you know, this evolutionary process and the solutions that are going to be necessary for us to move forward and you know, create the kind of world and future that, you know, really is waiting for us.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. I see it in not only the guests that are on the program here, you know, but in the listeners and the participation in the website and stuff. And you know what? I mean, in a weird way, it's not that many people, you know, but I'm not sure that that's the point.
I don't think so. But look how, if you want to look at numbers, look how popular Harry Potter books are.
Hmm.
I mean, and if take a look at what those really, I mean, a lot of people think of it in terms of magic and all that, but it's about really...
imagination.
It's about imagination. It's about, you know, confronting a world and situation from a place of self-empowerment, strength,
mm-hmm.
you know, and using courage and skill, you know, to basically create the kind of world that you want. I mean, people are hungry for this whole notion that we can actually take responsibility. Right. We have the power, you know, to, you know, take the ring to Mount Doom or however you want to express that. And,
you know,
people are hungry for those kinds of tales and stories that say, yeah, we can do this. You know?
Right. And John, you know, I think about partnership and friendship, too, you know, that's always a part of these things. And it's so important.
Absolutely. I mean, that's critical, I think. You know, I mean...
you know, man is an island, you know. Everybody wants to do something alone, but, you know, it's all about our friends.
It's about connection. It's about fellowship, you know, as we've talked about before. It's about, you know, bringing what talent, skills, abilities, powers we have to the table with others, you know, to share. I mean, it's about sharing. I can't imagine... And the whole notion somehow I can amass personal wealth for my own pleasure and benefit has no meaning to me whatsoever. Anything at this point, you know, that I gain in terms of material benefits, wealth, or, you know, whatever, for me has to be about a shared wealth. You know, it's a dying paradigm to think that I think any of us can amass personal fortunes for our own benefit and then kind of dole it out to charities after we all while we sit back and then really enjoy this enormous wealth. That makes no sense to me. And it's about sharing. It's about building community. It's about creating, you know, being about creating an infrastructure for a new mythology.
Mm.
And, you know, we can do this. I mean, you know, it's really up to us, you know, to move forward with this. And no one else is going to do it for us.
That's right. Sitting around waiting for it, it's not going to make it happen.
No.
You know? It's going to make something happen, and it's not going to be the thing you want, trust me.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, everybody, my guest is John Sheliak, Dr. John Sheliak. On the web, you can find information about John at www.johnsheliak.com, and you can link there directly from my site at mikehagan.com. You can also go to the archives and go to the show from February 26th and download that and listen to it maybe at a later date if you're interested in what we're talking about tonight for a little bit more background and depth to the whole business. But at any rate, it's great to have John back. And, John, toward the beginning of our talk, you mentioned this idea that nature, evolution, the cosmos, whatever, may have some sort of built-in stopgaps. Let's talk a little bit about that and what you mean.
Well, I mean, and Terrence, I think, saw this as well. If you look at, you know, I can take my clues from the cosmos and how what we see unfolding and what we know, what we think we know about it. I mean, if you look at it, what you see is, you know, something that starts out from basically a sea of quarks and ends up with this highly ordered, structured form, which includes life, intelligent life, and who knows what else. So this process that's unfolding in the cosmos is one of moving toward higher ordered integration, higher levels of connectedness. And, you know, it's a process that hasn't slowed down or changed direction as far as we know, as far back as we can remember.
Right, as far as we can tell, sure.
You know, so that's the process. That's the fundamental process in which we're embedded. So how can whatever we choose to do, how we choose to live our lives or whatever we choose to create, not in some fundamental sense be part of that process?
You know,
there was something else that when you asked that question that I was also thinking about. I think, there's just so much emerging from, from frontier physics and mathematics and all kinds of philosophical ideas about the possible nature of the cosmos, where it can take us, and from crop circle phenomena to, you name it, it's just all over the place. I mean, where is this all coming from, and why is it emerging now? I mean, people, we're at a place, I think, in history where the veil is very thin, and people can feel and sense, this, what do you want to call it, eschaton, or this larger process just beyond the veil. It's palpable for a lot of us, I think. Mm.
And you think that this is one of the things that's designed in order to kick in when a culture or a society or a species or whatever reaches a particular level where something has to give in order for them to survive or to be able to move along?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's built into our DNA and perhaps even dormant, features or parts of our DNA. There was a discussion on the latest version of What the Bleep, which is down the rabbit hole, which I found fascinating because I had many more interviews with people of differing backgrounds, sharing their perspectives. But there was one comment that had to do with the fact that it may be that, our most higher-minded values that we consider good, love and connectedness and, the values that really do bring us together and create a nurturing kind of connection and loving connection are just embedded in the nature, the fabric of space-time in some fundamental way and in our DNA.
There's this gentleman who's been on the program, again, a total privilege. His name is Joseph Chilton Pierce. And you may or may not know Joe Pierce, but last time he was on the program, it was a while ago, but he taught me something, and I went and learned more about it, but about Charles Darwin. And, everybody remembers Darwin for the origin of the species.
Of course.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, his later work was called The Descent of Man. And this was the work that he spent basically the rest of his life writing after he wrote Origin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, get this, man. In The Descent of Man, and this is why nobody knows about it.
Mm-hmm.
In The Descent of Man, Charles Darwin uses the word love 75 times or something.
Ah.
He uses the word I forget it now. It's a word that basically means, to do for others and to sacrifice yourself. What's the word? It begins with an A. But
that is interesting. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, and I think it supports the idea, that this is a part of who we are, but we've been taught and conditioned for 500 years that it has nothing to do with what we are,
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I thought that was remarkable. This and it's an amazing work. This thing that Darwin did after Origin of the Species.
Mm-hmm.
So, at any rate, Carl Jung talked about the same sort of thing, about this sort of governor that would kick in.
Mm-hmm.
So, gosh, I wonder if that is, maybe that is what all this stuff is about.
Well, it could very well be. There could be latent, dormant features in our genome, that require a certain type of energy circumstance, to be activated. We may, in fact, be rapidly approaching that if not already there. that notion is not new. It's, you know, it certainly occurred in my dreams and dream time, which for me, you know, dreams and dream time are a fundamental part of my life process. Mm-hmm. So I treat them as just something that, you know, are interesting and may reflect my day-to-day life process, but for me, they are, in fact, like the Australian Aboriginals, you know, a hyperspatial, hyperdimensional domain.
Right, the dream time is part of life, an important part.
You know, and it's affirmed over and over the fact that we're part of something truly extraordinary that's unfolding. And it may very well be related to shifts, changes, modifications, activations of the DNA itself, and I think very likely.
John, I want to thank Feline in the chat room for coming up with the word that I forgot. The word was altruism.
Uh-huh.
And this is another word that is found all throughout this work of Darwin. But anyway, how cool that in the chat that people hear and help us out. I love it. So
definitely. That's what it's about, isn't it?
Okay. Yeah, it's so cool. So thank you, Feline. That is, I love it. And the other word that isn't used, but agape, mm-hmm. the love of others. This is what is obviously, I think, built into us. And people who say that it's just frou-frou, I mean, they're not paying attention to even some of the science.
No, and the fact of the matter is, we all need our backs covered from time to time, every one of us. You know, and it's really wonderful to know that there are people out there, you know, who are capable, willing to do that. You know, I certainly, that's an important element in any relationships that I form in friendships, you know, that's about, look, you know, I'll cover your back whenever you need it. I, you know, recognize that none of us can be strong 100% of the time.
Mm.
You know, and... You know, it's this collective effort that really.
Right.
I mean, you know, even my ideas. A while back, I began abandoning the notion that my ideas were in fact just my ideas. For whatever reasons, they come through my awareness, and you know, I pluck them like, you know, plucking something from a stream.
Right.
You know, but when I go to the table with what other people might call my ideas, you know, it's like, you know, this is what I've come up with. What have you come up with? How can we make sense of this together, you know?
Yeah, tell me about it. I mean, I'm the same way. I mean, I used to think that everything I was... Thank God everything I come up with doesn't come from me. Otherwise,
really?
Otherwise I'd really be concerned. But anyway, I think that it's amazing that there are these people that have gone before that are, you know, that were telling us, hey, pay attention, this sort of stuff is going to be happening,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to increase. And, you know, Terrence said it, you know, Carl Jung said it, many others. And so, and now we sort of seem to be living in it.
Did you want to hear a little background on my connection with Terrence?
Sure, I'm sure people would love to hear that. I tell you what, let's... You want to take a quick break before we do that?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Let's do that. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and then we'll do a nice long segment, and you can talk about Terrence and anything else that we come on, and we can tie into the I Ching. There have been a number of questions about the I Ching, and we can just do a general overview of that. And there was one other thing. Oh, gosh, I got something that's going to take up a couple minutes before we do that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I got an email, and I also have the same question myself. Somebody recognized that the owl is relevant to you.
Absolutely.
Or important to you, maybe. So please talk a little bit about the owl and what it means to you, and I'd love to hear it. And obviously, a couple other people would too. So.
Well, that's an interesting story. One of the things that I do from time to time is take solo treks in New Mexico, it's in the mountain regions.
Mm-hmm.
For what some people would call vision quests. They're not strict vision quests, you know, in the native sense, but for me it's a way of connecting with the deeper features of my own life,
sure.
Dream time, and nature, the creatures in it. In the early 90s, I took my first trek into the mountains, which actually turned out to be near the VLA, which is the Very Large Array.
Yeah, yeah.
New
Mexico. Mm-hmm. Big old radio telescope array, if people aren't familiar with that.
Yeah. You know, the MOOC film Contact was filmed there, but it's an area that I take regular treks to. It's kind of a spiritual, mystical retreat for me. It's like connecting, you know, making my connection with the stars and the land down there. Anyway, this one of the first trips that I made down there was into the mountains. And I spent 2 weeks alone doing a solo journey. And the first night I was there, I was, you know, I had candles in my tent, and you know, I was busily writing in my journal, and I heard a sound. You know, and I stopped at first, and it was a little kind of, it sounded very strange and eerie at first, so I stopped and just became totally silent.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened, and it got closer and closer, and I realized it was actually an owl.
Hmm.
So I began trying to respond to it, you know, trying to imitate the call, and did a reasonably good job of it. And so what happened that night is that I was engaging this owl virtually all night long until I fell asleep in this dialogue. And, you know, sometimes, and I think it was a she would fly out a ways at a distance, and but I could still hear, and then come back to my camp, and that sort of went on all night long.
Mm.
Well, it turned out that this owl came into my camp. I was there for 2 weeks alone and came into my camp every night, and I had extraordinary dreams, not specifically related to owls, but some of the features that, you know, can be linked to owls,
yeah.
Like space-time dilations, that kind of thing. But one of the interesting features of that experience was that I had a tape recorder with me, a digital recorder with me, and, you know, one night, you know, what would happen, I would, you know, right around nightfall, I would go out and start making this call, and sooner or later, the owl would come in, and we would continue this dialogue.
Hmm.
Well, this one night, I said, you know, this is just unreal. I've got to get this on tape. You know, I mean, this is just too phenomenal, you know, for me just to let it go. So I went into my tent. So I started calling the owl. I heard her. And then I went into my tent, got the recorder, and started calling again, and it was dead silence. Nothing.
Huh.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, I got it.
No now, interest in
I put the recorder back in the tent, came out, started calling again, and she responded.
Oh, yeah.
So I said, you know, I get it. You know,
no interest in your gadgets, mister. Yeah.
Well, you know, so a couple of days later, you know, the same thing happened. I said, you know, I'm sorry. This is just too phenomenal. I've got to get this on tape. So I did the same thing, and the same thing happened.
Right, right.
Well, when I left, I didn't want to drive right back to Santa Fe into a busy city, so I, you know, got myself in a room in a very small motel that was in a crossroads, essentially, near where the VLA was, and just to sort of unwind and kind of slowly introduce myself into normal culture. But I got a room, and the room number was 3, you know, and when I opened the door, there on the wall was this very unusual kind of combination 2D, 3D print of an owl. And at first I thought, well, you know, this motel, there's probably one of these in every room, right? There's nothing unusual about that. So the next day I went to the owner. I said, look, you know, that's a very interesting, unusual painting of an owl that you have in my room. Is this something that's in every room? And she said, no, that's one of a kind, unique. And then she gave me a story of where it came from, somewhere in Arizona.
Right, right, right.
So, you know, it's this kind of experience. And, you know, so owl has been prominent in my life, you know, ever since then. And, you know, it's been an important ally of mine.
Well, I don't think it's foolishness. For me, it's a red-tailed hawk, and I could tell wild stories about that. And, you know, there's a wonderful woman named Doro Meinke, who was on the program maybe a year and a half ago. I'd love to have her back on the program, but she's just real busy, and it's hard to get her. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she talked a lot about power animals and, you know, your spirit guides and how they can take the form of different animals and stuff. And certainly this is something that is taught in many different traditions, you know.
Well, it is, you know, for, I think, a good reason. You know, this is not something they just thought up because it sounded good. They were having powerful, direct experiences with these phenomena and creatures, you know, as some of us have discovered. And, you know, I've had several other almost as remarkable experiences with owls. One, in fact, when my father died, which has been about 4 years ago, I told my mother he was dying, you know, over a period of months. I said, look, you know, I'm really not big on how we do funerals in this culture. What I would like to do is I would like you to cut a lock of his hair while he's still alive, and then when he dies, I want you to fly out here. She never left Michigan. I mean, it was the first trip. I want you to bring that lock of hair, and I'll write and do a ceremony for him. And And so she did, and I did, you know, and you know, I had it all set up, and I, awesome. The night before, or the day before, I had written the ceremony, and the night before I went to bed, and there was an owl that appeared outside my, you know, bedroom window the entire night that night. So, and I, you know, several other experiences like that I've had here in this house alone.
Well, I have zero difficulty believing. So, all right. Well, that's a great story and clarified the whole owl connection. So I'm glad you did it. Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
All right, everybody. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. We're going to take a quick break here. John, we'll have about I don't know. It's about 2.5 minutes long. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about Terrence McKenna and Dr. John Sheliak's relationship to Terrence. And then we'll slowly work our way into the time wave. Okay, Doc?
All righty.
All right, everybody. It's Mike. Good. KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It is Radio Orbit, and this is Joel Kraft, once again from his CD called Big Ideas. This is the title track, and on the web, joelkraft.net.
Big ideas get smaller the closer you get. Toys and ants grow taller, but big ideas retreat. They come sometimes in the dark of night, or in the heat of sharp debate. Midnight black or jewel bright, horizon gold of heaven's gate. Excalibur to the sky, birth of words and rhythmic thoughts, questions starting with why, and then the complications come, redescribing bar by bar the cage, run for protection from gravity. Get smaller, but they're dangerous pets. Trust me, seize them by the collar, and they'll kill you to get free. Don't you take those wild things home. Let them prepare to know that self is yours. It's a jungle.
Joel Kraft, great song, Big Ideas. That's the title track from that disc, Big Ideas. Again, on I always forget the name of the record label. It's no offense meant. Blinking Light Records, it's a good name, too. Blinking Light Records, same label as The Boone, who was on the program last week. And anyway, great stuff. Thanks, Joel, for the music. And thank you to all of you for listening. Hello to everybody in the chat room. Haven't had a chance to say hi yet, but thanks for being there. And we will say hello once again, one more time, to Dr. John Sheliak. Hi, John.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Good to talk to you again.
Yes, thanks for being here. And let's see, on the web, let's take care of that. John Sheliak, SHELIAK.com. JohnSheliak.com. And you can link there from my site. And yeah, all right. John, let's talk about Terrence.
Yes.
How'd you guys meet?
Well, we met in Boulder in, I think, 91, 92, something like that. A friend who lives in Denver knew I was interested, you know, in his ideas. And
you know, that's so funny because that's just, I got to Denver in 89.
Uh-huh, Really?
Yeah, and although I was in the periphery of that whole scene, I was paying attention, even though you knew it or not.
Uh-huh. Well, I actually arrived in Mexico in May of 89. That's when I arrived in New Mexico.
Yeah, and that's when the whole novelty group business and all that got going.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was on the early internet side of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Anyway,
you actually see him in Boulder?
No. Although I knew he was there, to be honest, I wasn't that impressed at the time. And I say that with reverence, believe it or not.
I mean,
it's just at the time I didn't know him well enough, or I didn't know his material well enough to be smart enough to get up there, I guess is a better way to put it. At the time, I just wasn't prepared for it. But man, after the fact, I died. I didn't.
Well, I would have been in the same place, Mike, except I had a good friend who lived in Mexico, she and her partner had a homestead north of Las Vegas, New Mexico,
uh-huh.
Wonderful homestead, and I used to go up there periodically for retreats. And, you know, one day she said, you know, I think, you know, you'd really like to hear this guy. So she broke out a tape of Terrence and played it. And I was just, it wasn't so much what the details of what he had to say, it was how he said it. And how he expressed himself that really grabbed my attention. And, you know, I think I said this before, is that, you know, when someone has ventured into the domain of the mystery in return, they return with an imprint that, for whatever reason, you know, I recognize, and I sort of felt and recognized that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, you know, after that, I started telling other friends about, you know, this tape that I had listened to, and one happened to be this friend in Denver, and so when she heard that he was going to be in Boulder, she immediately, you know, called me, and I think she called me on a, like, Wednesday, and I said, you know, I'm on my way. It was a Friday through Sunday kind of thing, and so that's how we first met, and, you know, I hadn't met him before, and
uh-huh.
I basically enjoyed all the weekend, but when he got to the time wave section, which was always on Sunday, he broke out, you know, this, you know, ancient computer by today's standards, you know, that was god-awful slow, and started demonstrating what this was. That just fascinated me. You know, it seemed like it was a little, you know, given the nature of what he was saying and the implications of what he was saying, I thought that, you know, the formulation was a little bit too underdeveloped. And so I frankly just wanted to explore some of the details of it using math that I use, and at the time it was Fourier transforms, trying to see if I could find spectral lines in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told him that, and, you know, I said, so he put me in touch with Peter Meyer, who actually wrote, you know, the DOS version, and who actually included, you know, the second stage of the mathematics, the fractal, you know, the fractal, mm-hmm. not really mm-hmm. an expansion, it's an expansion, not a transform. So he put me in touch with Peter. Peter actually rewrote, you know, the DOS version so that it would produce files that I could actually analyze. And that's how I actually got started. So, I mean, I didn't know anything about Terrence until the early 90s. You know, that's when I first heard the tape and then began kind of exploring this. And then, you know, so I started work on it, and then I got off sidetracked on some other things. And about 3 years later, I decided, you know, I'm really interested in this. I want to get back. But I want to see where it's at. I mean, for all I knew, you know, the whole notion had been abandoned. And so I went to Terrence's website and discovered that Matthew Watkins had, you know, gone through the math and said, look, you know, you made some thing, you've done things mathematically that don't make sense.
Right.
Explain what you've done here or abandon your theory. So at that point I realized that I was going to have to really get into the details of this first stage math, the math that actually takes, you know, the I Ching, first order of difference, basically, and expands that into a number set that is then fractal transformed or expanded. You know, and I worked with that first stage number set and discovered that, in fact, you know, the errors were there. But I said, you know, why should this affect, you know,
the overall?
Exactly, because, right. You know, you basically do it and then you plug it in and see what kind of time wave you get. And, you know, and if it turns out to be total trash and totally uncorrelatable to anything real, then you say, yeah, well, he's right, you know, can't be done, that kind of thing. But what I discovered, and so I contacted Terrence, I said, look, you know, what I would like to do is to really formalize this mathematically so that, at the very least, no matter where it's going to go, you know, the foundation is on firm mathematical ground.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, sure. He said, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I did and was able to do that. And, of course, then we published that.
Right.
Those
results. And that was huge. And Terrence, I know, personally know, that, and Dennis, too, you know, a hold of they're very grateful for you for doing that, John.
Well, it was my pleasure to do it, and I was, you know, I just felt fortunate to be able to do it, and, you know.
And you can tell if you go to that Levity site. I think it's still up, you know.
It is.
And you can see Terrence, you can actually hear it in his words, what he wrote. He's like, you know, he was so excited, you know, about it.
Definitely. You know, Dan, you know, I'm actually grateful to Dan.
Dan Levity.
He doesn't maintain the site, but he keeps it up on the server.
No doubt.
You know, which I think is, you know, a great honor for Terrence. And there have been times, you know, I thought, you know, I would actually talk with Dan and see it. Because one of the things that Terrence wanted to do before he left us was that he wanted to establish what he called a mathematical annex on his site, which to him meant, you know, a place where we could actually have a free exchange of ideas relating to time wave and really see if we could actually collectively, you know, and at that point, you know, I really, really respected him for having the willingness and the courage to let it go, you know, into the collective so that we could all take, you know, take part in developing it. You know, so I was grateful for that, and I, you know, I respected and admired him for his willingness and courage to do that. But he wanted to, you know, kind of establish this site so that people could actually, who were interested, you know, come together and actually discuss this, see what could be done, how could it more, you know, appropriately and rigorously be expressed in a way that you could actually move to actually doing some kind of test, a verification test in some way or another. So, and I thought, you know, from time to time it might be nice to do that, you know, if Dan was still interested, you know, in doing something like that. But effectively what's happening now is, you know, I'm also taking that road, you know, on my own site.
Well, John, let me ask you about the software. You know, I've gotten actually a couple of emails, believe it or not, from Peter Meyer. But I'm not sure that it's the Peter Meyer, because they're always short and sweet, and he's sort of cryptic and is not really interested in a dialogue. I'm not sure, but at any rate, I know that you have some stuff that you work on. There are a lot of people. I get a lot of email, and people say, you know, where can we get a hold of the software? How can we start messing with this stuff ourselves? And I said, well, I think that John's working on something, but I don't know. I don't want to put my foot in my mouth.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's my whole intention. Again, you know, the general theme, you know, and it's going to sound like a broken record before this is all over, you know, is to share this. You know, is to get it out there and let people play with it and see what they can come up with. So my whole intention, and first of all, I wanted to write something from scratch using essentially LabVIEW, which I have a good deal of skill in writing code in, because I like how to, you know, it works and how to do it. And so I wanted to sort of essentially do the same thing that the TimeWave Zero software does, but I wanted to add analytical features, you know, like spectral analysis, for example, so people could actually play with it, you know, and explore those features to see what they could come up with. And so the intention is, you know, twofold. You know, it's still in very crude form. You know, I'm certainly not going to release it at this point out to people until I get it in better shape, but to, you know, to basically create an .exe file that people can run. You know, I may be able to produce something for the Mac, too. I don't have the most recent versions of the Mac software, or LabVIEW software, so it may be a little bit more difficult to do that, but certainly, you know, produce something for Windows machines. And, you know, if I can find a way to do it, you know, I can actually do it in LabVIEW, but it requires that, you know, the machines that are interacting with it be running LabVIEW. So if I can figure out a way to get it online and interactive, you know, I'd like to do that as well. But most certainly my intention is to put it out there and let people play with it.
Wow.
So.
All right. Well, that's big news. That's good news, too. And some of that stuff we can actually look at in a little while here. I think maybe at the top of the hour we'll talk about some of the stuff that you're doing with regard to that, and we'll actually be able to look at some of the graphs and some of the interesting imagery that you're generating with the software, okay?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, in the meantime, let's go back and talk a little bit more about your relationship with Terrence. So, Dan Levy has done a great job. I put a note up here. I should probably invite Dan to come on the radio show. I'd love to.
Yeah, I think it might be interesting. You know, I think Dan has some interesting ideas, and you know, would be worth talking to, actually.
Yeah. Well, I
had a long-standing relationship for Terrence. I don't know how long, but you know, a good deal of time. So.
Oh, I know, and they were really close. I know at least at one point they were. So, all right. Well, what happened after that? Did you continue to work? It's interesting to me that you not only were interested enough to formalize it for Terrence, but you were interested enough to decide that it was worth continuing to work on even after, you know, Terrence left us. I mean, we're 7 years now. He died in the year 2000. So,
right.
So it obviously was something that grabbed you.
Well, it did. And initially, just you know, after he died, I thought, well, you know, I don't know where to go with this. And I think about a year later, I contacted Dan, and you know, I had some ideas, and I thought that, you know, perhaps we could, on Dan's site, create something like a mathematical annex, you know, to sort of honor Terrence and his memory. And, you know, at that point, Dan was actually interested in it. He said, well, just give me, you know, let me know what your ideas are.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have anything concrete at the time, and met this one guy who lives in Cambridge, Mass, and he had some really interesting ideas, not related to the time wave, but, you know, complex systems, emergent phenomena, that kind
not
of
Rupert.
Thing. And I thought, well,
Rupert?
Maybe some week we can link all of this, but that never really happened.
You mean Rupert? Are you talking about Rupert Sheldrick?
No, not Rupert.
Oh.
This guy actually, I have a link to, it's Robert Solomon.
I read about him on your site.
Intellergy Institute out of Cambridge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Interesting man. You know, I went to a lecture of his in Cambridge, it's been a number of years now, and he had some fascinating ideas, you know, that basically you can find on his website, which is, I have a link to.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that never really emerged, and so, you know, and I got off on other things, and buried in personal stuff that was happening here, so I kind of lost touch with it for a bit, at least consciously.
Right.
It was something that was always there, and I knew that at some point I really wanted to take a look at how I could develop it in a way that would get the attention of colleagues and scientists who are open-minded enough to look at this, but also would demand a certain level of rigor and, you know, a theory that was a little bit more fleshed out than how Terrence actually was able to, you know, express the whole novelty theory idea. I think he made a wonderful start. I mean, and I said my paper, I said, you know, this man has to be, you know, commended for having the courage, audacity, or foolhardiness to bring this kind of thing to the collective.
Oh my God! People who don't know Terrence don't realize. He was no mathematician. He had no interest in this to begin with. I mean, he was basically forced into it.
Absolutely.
You know? And
hijacked by God knows what, right?
Who knows what. Yeah, but it's really the truth of the matter. He became a pretty damn accomplished mathematician, but it was kicking and screaming, you know?
Definitely.
And John, you have just been one of these angels that showed up to really help him, and I think it's remarkable, the whole story, but yeah, it's comical at the same time, as all these things usually are, you know.
Well, the fact of the matter is, you know, since Terrence died and moved into whatever hyperspatial domain he's in now, I've really never lost a sense of his presence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that energy is still in my life, and it's almost as though, you know, as I said earlier, it's being kind of, for me, you know, my own awareness being hijacked now by Terrence to get me focused on actually following through with what my original intention was. And so that's what I'm, you know, about trying to do at this point. You know, just I mean, not just look at the current time wave and novelty theory as expressed, but really develop that as well. I mean, a lot of people, you know, talk about this whole notion of having something that can predict the future as being, okay, where's free will come in then, if you got this thing that's going to tell you what's happening in the future. But I don't look at it like that. You know, I mean, quantum physics, for example, at a quantum level, the whole process is random, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how, you know, on a large scale, do you get this extraordinary order from a process that's totally random?
Mm-hmm.
I think time works the same way. You know, on the scale of human awareness in our brains, time is, in fact, a random process, which, in fact, gives us our free will. But the concatenation of this collective free will adds up to this extraordinary pattern, you know, the tapestry that we see unfolding before us. So for me, that's really, I mean, if the time wave and, you know, its connection to whatever reality it can be connected to, and I think it, ultimately if it's going to be anything, it's got to be the quantum field or the unified field in some fundamental way, they have to be linked, then, you know, that's basically, something that you can see as allowing free will as well as having this emergent, beautiful tapestry.
Amazing. Well, I'll tell you something, John. You mentioned that you have the sense, you know, that Terrence is still hanging around, whether it's just, you know, his memory or what. But, you know, while he was alive, Terrence talked about his own experiences, you know, in those strange places, those bardic realms, you know, of DMT and psilocybin and this sort of thing. And he always talked about the ancestors. And he didn't particularly buy into it, frankly.
No, he didn't.
But he always speculated that, you know, the shamans and even his own experiences in the DMT flash were that somehow the entities there that were trying to communicate with him were perhaps ancestral. And then he went on to clarify that, you know, well, when we say the ancestors, that's really just sort of a clean way to say dead people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that in my own experience, in my own teachings, is that now that Terrence is one of the dead people, is one of the ancestors, perhaps he realizes, nobody knows it all, and maybe he is still with us and doing his best to move us forward and the brotherhood of mankind that he was so interested in seeing, you know, succeed.
Well, definitely. You know, one of the things, he may not have personally resonated with the concept, but I think he had a deep respect for those who did, you know, who believed in that, you know. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, how do you define dead? You're talking about a concept that we really know very little, if anything, about, right?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, one of the films that I put up on my website that I think is a powerful film, although it was only in the theaters for a couple of weeks because it was far too intellectual, I think, for most people. It wasn't enough action in it, but it was Solaris, you know, American version of Solaris,
yeah.
George Clooney.
Yeah.
And basically dealing with the whole issue of life, death, what a hyperspatial domain might be, and also, you know, a culture, people coming against something that is outside of the context of their worldview and how much resistance they have moving forward and embracing that.
Well, I think,
And during one of the conversations in that film with a physicist, a woman physicist, you know, Clooney, who plays this physician, you know, they're in this argument, you know, and she's trying to tell him, you know, this phenomenon is happening, you know, it's threatening, you know, your wife is dead, you know, she can't reappear here, and he's saying, you know, you can't tell me, you can't speak authoritatively with a concept of which you really know very little, if nothing. You know,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
so when we talk about dead folks, you know, I mean, what does that mean? I mean,
right. Who's the authority?
I mean, it's like for me, what comes to mind is what if, you know, life, death is sort of like, you know, we really exist in this hyperspatial domain, and we project down into 3D, you know, like a shadow, what we experience as our body. Now, you take a 3D character, you know, backlight them with the sunlight or some form of light, you know, cast a shadow. The shadow has some of the features of 3D body, moves around, whatnot. But, you know, there's a lot missing.
Mm.
Take the light source away, the shadow disappears, but the, you know, the 3D body still exists. You know, what if life death is like that? You know, basically we're talking about, you know, and the fact of the matter is, you know, I think, you know, I've never, for a long time, haven't subscribed that there are these separate spiritual and physical domains, you know, that we kind of can, you know, go to and from. Everything that we see in the cosmos, everything exists on a continuum. You know, there's no, you know, this whole notion, with the exception of maybe quantum level, where you get what appears to be these discrete phenomena, but that still all adds up to this dynamic, continuous process.
Mm.
You know, and, you know, so, you know, if this is happening, then, I don't know. I don't know how to describe that, but it's all in a dynamic process, and there's no way that you can separate these domains as though they're kind of have you know, something completely different over here than you do over there.
Right. And John, the fact that you said you don't know how to describe it, I mean, that's the right answer. I mean, how could you?
Right.
I mean, how could any of us? I mean, it's
exactly.
This is the thing that's the mystery of the whole business. So.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I think, you know, we need to reclaim, you know, as we were talking about earlier, how, and again, Terrence was big on this, about how language has been hijacked by those who want to use it for their own reasons. You know, we have to reclaim language,
right,
you know.
Right, up to now it's been the Goebbels gang and that whole crowd, you know.
Yeah.
It ain't them anymore.
Dealing with drugs, for example, and just lumping all drugs together. I mean, that's a, you know, a bastardization, a radical distortion, you know, of language. You know, that really needs to be reclaimed if you can have it. You know, if you're going to have an intelligent discussion, you know, about, you know, drugs and drug issues.
Right. Let's talk about definition first and foremost. Yeah. Well, I'm so for it. Okay. Look, we're top of the hour. Let's take a break here. Okay.
Ready.
And we will come back in just a few moments with the good Dr. John Sheliak on the web at johnsheliak.com. You can link there from my site as well, and this program will be up in the archives shortly after we get it finished up here in an hour or so. In the meantime, let's hear another one from Joel Kraft. This is from his CD, Big Ideas. We've been pulling stuff from it all night. And speaking of the ancestors, you know, I do consider Terrence one of them now, and I sort of disrespected him a little bit earlier. So, just in case he took it personally, this one's for him. Or he can take it as such. This is called Blessed is the Name. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back in a few minutes with John Sheliak.
Blessed be the name of the man who stole my car. He will not travel far without me. I've got no time for blame or to reassert my claim. This spell I'm under won't last till next Thursday. I see him driving by and he knows I'm scandalized. He looks me in the eye and rounds the corner. This vision I endure through the window as I stir my buttered oatmeal every morning on the burner. La di da da da, la di da 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 da, la di da 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 da, di da 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 da. Blessed be the heretofore unmentionable doubt that turns me inside out when I'm alone. Blessed be the voices weaving through the summer breeze, healing laughter as celebratory tones. In my time of doubt, I threw my eyes upon the sky, and I search in vain for my familiar wantings. But emptiness, it seems, cast its hook into my dreams, and depopulated me of my sweet dauntings. Da di da da da, da di da 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 da, da di da 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 da, Blessed be defeat and surrender in the street as I throw myself amidst the morning traffic. Last week I threw my faith into the backseat of my car, where it melted to a star of glowing plastic. Without it I've been reduced to ugliness and sin, not to mention all those grumpy little chocolates. Now the man whose name I've come to prey upon comes rolling through the dawn, a lump of phosphorescence in his pocket. Blessed be the name of the man who stole my car. We shook hands in a bar, but was I dreaming? This spell I've cast upon myself has eased my consciousness upon a shelf occupied by the likes of giants. In the open spaces I've begun to effervesce as a playground gives its guests a joyful screaming. Now suffice to say that I've got no more time today to give to cars, thieves, faith, oatmeal, and other lusty tyrants.
For the ancestors, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Wonderful tune there from Joel Kraft called Blessed Be the Name. All right, we've got Dr. John Sheliak on with us live from his place in Santa Fe, New Mexico. On the web, you can find information about John at www.johnsheliak.com. You can always link over there from my site. And, well, hi, John. Thanks for sticking around, man.
Hi, Mike. It's good to be with you.
All right. Hey, let's start to talk a little bit about the time wave itself, and I want to direct people to some of the imagery that we have been sharing over the last few days, okay?
Sure.
So, first of all, people who are listening, if you're on the web, either go to my site at mikehagan.com and just scroll down, and right at the front page there, you will see a link that says Time Wave Dilations. It's just under John Sheliak's name, and then there's a big... there's an image underneath that. If you go to that time wave dilations link, that'll take you over to John's site, and there'll be a number of different selections you can make from there. But just go over to that page, and you can just start peeking around at some of those charts that are there. And you can also just go to John's site directly at johnsheliak.com, and if you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see there's a couple of links that are flashing. And it says, new link, open time wave dilations, special analysis of the time wave fractal curve. If you click there, that'll take you to the same place, all right? And so that's a good place to start. But, John, before we actually start talking about the graphs, there are a number of people in the chat room and that I've got over email that say, could you please have John just talk a little bit more about the mathematics? I'm clueless, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know even where to start. I'm reluctant to, but maybe you could do your best to help
people
understand the mathematics.
You know, it's a little convoluted, but, you know, it's not all that difficult. You know, it sort of helps if you have some sense for what the I Ching is, and that is a set of what are called 64 hexagrams, each, you know, basically, say, 64 stones with, with each stone having six lines that are a combination of either a solid line or a broken line, is sort of binary in nature. In other words, you have ones and zeros. And each of the hexagrams, of course, has six lines of varying solid and broken lines. And those individual hexagrams, you know, are equated to a certain number in the, basically the tradition of the I Ching. And, you know, the form of the I Ching, or the tradition that Terence connected with and, you know, expressed through, you know, the time wave, something that's called the King Wen sequence.
The King
according
Wen
to
sequence.
Him, and this is, you know, I don't know a lot about, you know, the ancient history of the I Ching, but I do remember that Terence said something about the fact that the King Wen sequence is one of the oldest. I don't know
the oldest
manifestations of the I Ching.
You know, John, let me add something too, real quick, just for the record. There was a show that I did, I don't know, a little while back with Jonathan Zapp. And I don't know if you know Jonathan Zapp, but anyway.
I remember the name.
Yeah, well, he knows. We did a real interesting discussion about the I Ching, and then we actually did a reading. We actually did a toss on the air, and took a reading from the book. But at any rate, if people are interested, that's another one to go back and listen to, Jonathan Zapp, because I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it here, but we spent a lot of time on it there.
Yeah.
Not that John couldn't. I'm certain that he could, but I just don't want to spend our whole time there. But anyway, as much more as you'd like to go into, John.
Well, you know, so you've got this effectively what's called a Chinese oracle. Some people consider it a parlor game. Other people take it more seriously. And, you know, basically what happens is you toss a set of three coins, six times, you know, and depending on the configuration, heads or tails of each of the three coins, you basically create a line that's either broken, solid, or somewhere in between, meaning changing. It can go from solid to broken or broken to solid. And so what you get is either one or two numbers, depending on whether if there's changing lines in each of the hexagrams, that are then related to a specific, well, you basically cast it after asking a question or posing an issue or a question that you want an answer to, and then you cast the coins, comes up with, you know, one or two numbers depending on whether or not you have, you know, a changing line
or not, yeah.
And, you know, and that will give you, according to whatever tradition that you're, in this case it's the King Wen sequence, give you essentially a reading that will kind of delineate, describe for you what your life process or the issue in your life process that you've, you know, asked about, you know, is what's happening. And one of the things that I liked about the I Ching is that it was always brutally honest, you know, with, and it's, you know, that meant that I wasn't all that eager sometimes
to ask the coins
because I wasn't interested in bad news. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, that's one of the things that I appreciate and valued about it, because, if the life process was going to be about some kind of struggle, then, you know, I was going to get an honest answer about that. And, you know, and frankly, you know, honesty, whether it's bad news or not, is what I prefer over, you know, frosting on something that doesn't, you know, require frosting. It's like what Christ said about, you know, coffins. He called them whited sepulchres, you know, meaning that, you know, nice and pretty on the, they're painted pretty on the outside but rotting on the inside. So the I Ching is essentially something like akin to other oracles, but I find it much more interesting.
Whoa.
And the tradition, you know, goes back a long way, and Terence actually thought that, you know, and I think one of his comments was, you know, this is, you know, the I Ching is mathematics that we don't understand. And, you know, who knows? He might turn out to be right. You know, that's certainly one of the things that I want to explore. You know, are we really onto something that somehow made its way into the collective, who knows how, that is a form of mathematics that's something that we don't yet understand.
John, it's interesting that, you know, all of it's interesting, but there's a book that you remind me of a couple of things. I got a book that I haven't read yet, but it has something to do with the I Ching and the connection to the genetic code.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's one that's worth reading. But you also remind me of the Rolling Stones and the fact that the I Ching, first of all, it works, it seems. This is the weirdest thing about it, mm-hmm. is that, I mean, it says occult as, you know, the tarot, or throwing the bones, or Ouija, or any of this sort of thing. But I mean, people who actually do it, and I'm one that does.
I mean, I am as well.
Yeah, I mean, they'll tell you. I mean, this is freakish. I mean, how accurate it is. And you're right. It's like I said just a minute ago. It reminds me of the Stones. You can't always get what you want, but you get what you need.
Absolutely. You know, and I think certainly the I Ching does that. But you know, I've drawn cards from medicine cards, for example, which I typically do before any shamanic ceremony that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes another deck. I have another deck that's called Sacred Geometry or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my experience is that if you're really tuned in
to any particular oracle,
the answers that you get for an inquiry into what's happening with one's life process are just uncanny. And you can argue if you just draw one card, well, that's just luck. But I did a ceremony with a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, and we each drew two cards from two separate decks. Those two cards nailed her life process unlike anything I could imagine, and the two cards I drew nailed mine. Now, what is the probability you're going to get four cards from two separate decks saying the same things, you know, about individual life process? So, you know, the same thing for me with the I Ching. I mean, it's uncannily accurate when describing where my life process is at. And sometimes, you know, I'm not interested in hearing, you know, what it has to say. But anyway, you know, certainly Terrence was interested, and I don't really know how he became interested in, you know, it's just one of those things that I think he studied. You know, he, you know, oldest books, you know, butterflies, all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think it was actually, you know, during their trip to the Amazon and the La Charrera experiment that all of this issue related to a higher form of math and how do we express that emerged. Am I right?
Yeah, I think you are. And I think that's a perfect segue to go to the freaking graph that I'm looking at right here. Yeah, if you go to John's website, just like I mentioned, go to johnsheliak.com and then click on the link that takes you to the time dilation software. There's a number of different things that he's done analysis on. The two that I sort of chose for tonight was La Charrera, and I was interested in the 1929 crash because I'm very interested in what's happening in the economy right now. But at any rate, let's look at La Charrera, okay, John, and maybe you can be our Rosetta Stone for us and
briefly,
tell us.
You know, if you look at this, people are looking at this front panel on the far left upper right. Is it the actual time wave plot?
And this is where it says time wave output graph.
Correct. Now, you know, this is a result of two sets of mathematics. One, which takes the I Ching hexagrams, which have varying numbers of solid and changing lines. In other words, if you go from hexagram 1 to 2, for example, in the King-Wen sequence, all six lines change from all solid to all broken.
Mm-hmm.
You write that number 6 down, you proceed through the entire set, and you get a number set. You know, Terrence then expanded that based on information that I think he received and his concept that, well, you want to express the I Ching as one unit is a hexagram, the second unit is two trigrams, and the third unit is individual lines.
Mm-hmm.
So he used those concepts to expand the mathematics of the original first order of difference number set, you know, to what you see on the lower left, which is the data file.
Okay.
Now that's the data file that I generated by formalizing the mathematics.
And that's the stock market looking like graph.
Yeah, it looks like
just bounces up and down.
Kind of almost looks random. Although if you do a analysis on it, you find out that it's far from random. So you take that particular graph and then you expand it with what's called a fractal expansion, and you actually get a fractal waveform that, the way it was done, you know, starts at a fairly high level and over time drops to essentially zero, you know, and so the overall time wave graph starts at some high level and drops to zero. Now, with Terrence's notion, you know, as the graph is decreasing in value, novelty is increasing. So that's kind of counterintuitive, but that's what's happening. So in this graph on the upper left, which is purple, the purple part, you know, I actually did a linear fit with all of these because I was interested in, you know, the general trend. But the purple line graph is that the actual time wave graph. And as you see it, you know, it starts out, it's almost level, it increases a little bit, or novelty decreases, or as Terrence would say, habit increases, and then it drops over a period of time. So what you have is a graph that, for all intents and purposes, for this time period, and the time period that we're showing here, you know, is specified in the time span, you know, which is the box in the lower left, enter the time span, which is 12 days. That graph in the upper left represents 12 days, but it's expressed in days to zero date. You know, again, this is just because it was easy to do that, and ultimately this will actually get expressed, you know, in forms that people will be able to recognize. But days to zero date means days from the target date, you know, which is 1971. I'm looking at La Guerrera, March 4th, 1971. That's the target date. And then, you know, 12 days, so you have 6 days on either side of the target date.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you look at that.
All right.
And so the days to the zero date, you know, the center date, you know, is the La Guerrera date of March 4th, 1971,
right.
To December 21st, 2012. So the number, which is, what, 15,267.7 days, is the number of days from the La Guerrera experiment to December 21st, 2012. So that's how you would look at that.
All right. And, you know, John, I'm just going to add a bit of trivia here for folks who don't know, but if you think about the date, it's sort of a play on words, March 4th. It's one of the reasons why Terrence chose that particular date. They could have done it the day after or whatever. But but March 4th, in the terms of marching forward, you know. Terrence had, yeah, he had that stuck in his head from a kid at a parade, you know, or something. But anyway, I always thought it was interesting because whenever March 4th rolls around, I don't think of it as March 4th. I think of it as, wow, a day to roll forward, you know.
Well, look what happened with that purple line on the upper left hand.
Mm-hmm.
The cursor, which is the green cross, which intersects the x-axis, you know, at this 15,267.7 value, intersects the purple line while it's descending. So it's definitely, you know, novelty is definitely moving forward as you look at that graph.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Absolutely, yeah.
And so one of the things, you know, this is how Terrence expressed, you know, this is as far as Terrence got with his whole time wave notion. You know, the planetary process was either becoming more novel or less novel, you know. And, you know, major historical events, he was able to correlate to the direction of movement of the graph. In other words, where something major was happening, like, you know, he was more interested in the ancient stuff, like the birth of Christ and
Italian Renaissance
that kind
and sort of thing. Right.
You know, he was able to say, like, during these significant novel events, you know, the curve was actually becoming more novel.
Mm.
But, you know, my take was that, look, you know, on planet Earth, you may have a number of things that are happening simultaneously. Some
what was happening on the other side of the Earth?
More novel, and others are becoming less or more habitual.
Right.
So those would combine, you know, to form the graph as it's seen. So embedded in any of these segments of graph, you're going to have novel and habitual processes simultaneously.
Ah, yeah. So it's much, much more complicated, yes.
So one way of dealing with that, you know, basically is the whole process of Fourier transforming. You know, Fourier transform converts time data into frequency data. So you get from any waveform that, well, it can be time or space. You know, we, in fact, you know, with the work we're doing in Los Alamos, the x-axis is actually space instead of time. But you can actually, in Fourier analysis, is simply using a large series, theoretically an infinite series of sine and cosine waves that are added together. You know, these waves are, you know, different frequencies and amplitudes relative to one another, and you can essentially produce any waveform, any line shape from summing the proper number of sine and cosine waves together.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Fourier analysis is. And
okay.
So when you look at the frequency components of those, you get what you see in the center graph at the top. You know, basically a number of lines that represent the frequencies that are present in that signal, essentially. Now, you know, early on, you know, my interest was to try to find specific spectral lines related to processes, but it turns out that because this is fractal in nature, Fourier analysis isn't the best way to extract data. It turns out, and I actually got this tip, you know, many years ago from Ralph Abraham,
huh,
the chaos mathematician.
Oh, yeah.
We had a conversation. He said, why don't you try wavelets? And at that time, wavelets were new, you know, were like, nobody, I mean, they were kind of frontier, and not a lot of people were using them.
Well, I'm sure it's a
widespread.
I'm sure it's a new term to some people listening to this program. John, let me just make a general clarification for myself and for other people, okay? So the time wave in general moves from a high value essentially down to zero.
Right.
But
or a very low level of novelty to effectively an infinite level of novelty.
Right. But in between, the closer you look at it, you'll find peaks and valleys and all kinds of changes in smaller sections of the graph, and you just have to sort of zoom in on it.
Exactly.
And essentially you're zooming in on time periods.
Exactly. You know, and some of those periods are going to be becoming more novel during the period you're looking at, and some will be becoming more habitual.
Right.
It depends on which period you're looking at and how small the period is or
right.
how large.
And it's not all, and it's not cut and dried. In other words, at the time of Christ's birth, assuming that that was a real event,
mm-hmm.
and considering that as a novel occurrence,
mm-hmm.
there could have been something very habitual happening on the other side of the planet at the same time that could sort of balance that out to make
exactly.
it not be
like
as obvious.
Like in my view, war, which is habitual, it's the same old thing.
Right,
war
right,
going
right.
on would sort of counterbalance that. But you know, again, we're talking about something that we have to gauge. I mean, how do we as human beings with relatively restricted minds, how do we conceive of how nature would express something like this?
Right.
I mean,
right.
how would nature, or you know, whatever is responsible, evaluate you know an event like the birth of Christ,
right, right,
100 years war that may be going on at the same time, or you know, certain elements of the Roman Empire, you know,
right,
solidifying
right.
power. We don't know that.
Right.
You know?
Well, and I think it's important that we recognize that this is what we're grappling with. In other words, this is the cookie that we're trying to take a bite out of, you know?
Absolutely, right.
So
well,
it's no small
part
thing.
Of the rigor that I think needs to be addressed before, you know, assuming one can take it that far, before you would begin to get, you know, a wider acceptance by, granted, open-minded scientists for the whole notion, you know, you really have to deal with these kinds of questions. You know, how do you define this?
Yeah. Well,
go ahead.
I had a metaphor that sort of came to mind. You mentioned the very large array earlier,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking of the movie Contact, and in that film, they get the message, and at first they realize just the rudimentary part of it. And then they realize that embedded within the message, there's all kinds of sub-messages. Just depends on how
mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
they twist it this way and turn it that way and whatever.
Yes.
So this is a similar thing. And
definitely similar, right.
And you're finding this the deeper you look into it.
That's the hope and, you know, the encouraging result. Although, you know, as I said earlier and I mentioned the site, this is all very preliminary
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of work to be done. But,
right.
yeah, that's the intention, is to say, okay, let's tease out, you know, more detailed information, you know, that, you know, because if you're just talking about becoming more or less novel, there are all kinds of ways of interpreting that, you know, and that's one of the reasons why you can't carry that and why there was a lot of heavy criticism of the whole notion, because you can't really... You know, it's too much open to interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
going to be a really solid theory. You've got to pin it down a little more so you can say, okay, this has happened, here's how it shows up, and here's how it shows up again.
Right, right, right. So looking for reference points and precedents that sort of look the same as something that might be valuable.
Exactly. You know, in La Chirera, let's go back to why select La Chirera. Well, the argument is, okay, you know, if La Chirera produced the time wave, which turns out to be something that can be correlated with experience and reality, then this is big stuff.
Right.
We're talking Nobel Prize stuff here. Right? I mean, that's how big it is. It's a long way from that. But so if La Chiarera produced something like that, then it should show up as a pretty significant event on a graph that was designed to extract this kind of detailed information.
Right, right. But again, you got to weigh it with other things that are happening at the same time, and this is where it becomes a little bit more cloudy.
Right. You know, but this is where you know, for example, Fourier analysis or wavelets. Wavelets is a form of Fourier analysis, but rather than using infinite series, you know, Fourier analysis depends on the fact that the waveforms you use extend from minus infinity to plus infinity. They're just continuous.
Uh-huh.
With wavelets, you can actually tailor your little waveform to suit the kind of curve that you're looking at, and you can restrict it in time.
No.
So you can either expand it or contract it in time, dilate it. You know, a contraction and expansion are both dilations. And then you can, what happens, what you do in the case of Fourier or wavelets, let's take you have a little wavelet form, you know, it has a certain shape and a certain duration. You overlay it on this section of the graph that we're looking at, this outwave graph, and you compare the wavelet with what the graph looks like, and if they're highly correlated, you get a line, get a strong correlation. If they're not, you know, you get a zero, and you just take that and you just move it along the output graph, and you basically you're going to create something like you see in the lower right. You know, and I'm not going to talk about this in detail because there's a lot of work, but these coefficients, you get different magnitudes at different times along this waveform, and that's what you see in that lower right graph.
Right, the DWT coefficients.
Right. Now, this is a discrete wavelet transform coefficient. Now, the top graph is continuous, and, you know, therefore what you get is this contour-like map. You know, and if you were to project this or expand this into 3D instead of a 2D map, you would see a series of mountain ranges with valleys, you know. So, you know, in this graph where you see these really intense red, you know, that would be the high peaks, you know, and as the color goes down, you'd be getting lower and lower peaks.
Right.
So my interest was, does this particular date, you know, in 1971 show up as any of these peaks? Well, turns out that, I've forgotten which one right now, the way you know, this x axis basically is in points, time spent, you know, the time period that is shown in the time wave graph, you know, in days to zero date is divided by 1024. So you can actually convert that to date, and what it turns out is that either those really intense red peaks toward the top of the graph, either the left or the right one, are very closely correlated to that particular date. In other words, it looks as though, and this is only preliminary, and there's a lot of work to be done, it looks as though the La Chiarera event does show up as some kind of intense peak, you know, on this particular graph. Now, there are lots of other information on here, which you would expect. You know, as I said, you're going to expect that any given period, you're going to have a lot of things happening on the planet. And frankly, I don't think the time wave you can argue that it applies to the entire cosmos, because there you're dealing with highly advanced civilizations, very likely civilizations that are less advanced than us, although it's hard to see that that's possible sometimes. But so I think from my perspective, you have to look at the time wave as a somewhat local phenomenon, you know, right now, because then it makes it easier to interpret. You know, when you look at this particular graph, you can say it looks interesting. It does look like something definitely, a peak, shows up around the date of interest.
Right.
You know, and, you know, that is certainly interesting. You know, we'll look at it further. The lower graph shows a number of lines. You can see, you know, it has zero in the middle, and then it, you know, goes up some positive value, negative value. Now, I think, you know, there's a lot of work to be done here that these lines may ultimately be, you know, shown to be related to either something being a habitual phenomena or an event or a novel event. In other words, it may turn out that, you know, the positive going lines in that graph, you know, are habitual events, and the negative going lines are, you know, novel events. I don't know that yet, but I have, you know, my instinct tells me that could be the case.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, it's fascinating, and it's remarkable. You know, I remember looking at the old, you know, graph paper things that Terence used to draw. You know, people don't realize that he started doing all this stuff before computers, for the most part, before the personal.
All by hand.
You know, before the personal computer.
Maybe calculators, but that was it.
Right. and they would sketch out these graphs and on page after page of you know, graph paper.
Mm-hmm.
And now, looking at what you've got, and you know, not just the graphs and the data itself, but John, it's real cool to see. People can get a little bit of an idea of what the software is going to be like, because, you know, they can see all of your fields for different, you know, data points. And I don't know, you know, if they're familiar with computers, they'll see magnifying glasses and little hands and things, and they'll know that this is a piece of software. It's going to be pretty fun to work with.
Yeah, it will be. You know, when people become familiar with it, they're going to have a lot of fun with this. You know, and all the other, aside from the graphs, the other boxes that you see there on the panel are either inputs or outputs. You know, and I tend to be one who diagnoses like crazy, so a lot of these may not, or some of them certainly may not even be on the final panel, but I do it because I want to see what's going on in every part of the software, so I just mm-hmm. diagnose like crazy, and I put these, you know, these output panels on the front panel so I can see what's happening.
Well, it's so cool. I'm right now I'm looking at select fractal expansion algorithm. I just like to say it, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the features I haven't integrated yet. Now, the fractal expansion, not what I'm using now, is the Meyer expansion.
Mm,
as
Peter,
I said,
yeah. mm-hmm.
one of the things that I want to do is to really develop the theory itself. You know, and there may be a better way of actually doing this, because part of what he did, and maybe in discussions with Terence and other people, I have no idea. I wasn't privy to how that evolved. You know, looked to me to be somewhat arbitrary. You know, so you know, maybe it wasn't, but you know, it certainly looked, you know, the fractal expansion that he used to be somewhat arbitrary, because it was designed to be decreasing over time.
Mm-hmm.
It may turn out that there's another way of doing that that doesn't appear as arbitrary. Again, because I wasn't privy to how that all unfolded, I really don't know. And you know, Peter is, I think, very interested in discussing or exploring that at this point. Oh, who knows? You know, he may.
Right.
You know, miracles have happened.
Yeah, I mean, I sent him a note. I told him I'd love to talk to him. I don't even know him. I mean, I've just got a couple, like I said, a couple of brief emails from somebody named Peter F. Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if F is his, even though that's
I don't know. I don't remember a middle initial, but it's possible.
But he said a couple things.
Surprised me.
Yeah, said a couple things that seemed to, you know, I thought it was probably him, and I sent him a note back and said, hey, well, thanks, it's great. You know, if you're who I think you are, thank you, and you know, and. I'd love to talk to you or whatever. At any rate,
yeah, it would be interesting to get Peter reengaged. Although, you know, he really turned out to be one of the major critics.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, both Terence and I, when we published the paper I wrote, were busy fielding criticisms from Peter as well as a lot of other people. But you know, which you kind of really expect. I mean, this is something.
Oh yeah.
Like Sagan, you know, Carl Sagan said, you know. You know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. So, I mean, you know, the burden of proof is on, you know, the theory itself and, you know, how it's to be expressed. And in this particular graph, and I mean, just point this out, we're looking at the one that's related to the stock market crash of 29 and the depression. The stock market crash on this graph on the upper right, you know, it can be, you know, the first cursor is pretty much on the point where, you know, the crash occurred. It turns out that the market didn't really bottom out, though, until 1932.
Hmm.
So
yeah.
That's about the middle of the graph. And it never really recovered to its pre-29 levels until sometime in the 50s. That's how big this thing was.
Mm.
Now, what these other red peaks are, I don't know. They're, you know, and this is also occurring during, you know, World War II coming up and other things that may be happening. But again, this is another case where it appears as though there are some correlations with peaks on this graph with the events that are related to the stock, to the crash in 29 and the depression. Now the trick is, you know, one of the reasons, you know, one of the things that has to be done with this kind of thing is, okay, you know, let's look in the future. Do we see anything similar at this particular scale, you know, the scale in the y-axis, you know, at, say, you know, 31.1 in the future and see if something else occurs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, say, okay, sometime in 2000, late 2007 or 2008, we're going to have another major stock. Maybe not a crash, but it's going to be a big event.
Mm-hmm.
And if that event happens, then that just sort of adds, you know, it's further evidence. It's certainly not proof, but it's further evidence there may be something to this.
Right, and the more you keep adding these things up and
right.
compiling them, and this is the whole idea, I guess, is data collection and analysis.
Yeah. Bob, one of the things that I found interesting, I don't know if you looked at the Indian Ocean tsunami in 2004,
uh-huh.
because that was such a big event, you know, I'm going to open that up now.
Yeah, let me go
you
there
know,
right
I,
now,
I
too.
Thought, you know, this large, I mean, was it 30,000 people were killed? I don't know, lots of them.
Well, I mean, I don't think they know how many, but
yeah.
certainly very, very many people.
But what shows up again, you know, on this graph,
wow.
this right dead on, you know, this peak at that date, you know, is it about the tsunami? We don't know yet, but, you know, this is certainly interesting enough to kind of explore it and see if we can, you know, make it a little bit more rigorous. And one of the things that has to be done, of course, is maybe the theory of the waveform itself has to be improved. I don't know yet.
Mm. Well, I mean, eventually, you know, Terrence's idea was, yeah, you'd be able to use it almost for individual, you know, it could be that accurate where you can actually tease out your own life.
I think that's possible, but then one has to say, you know, how will it show up? I mean, how does, you know, can you say that the events of my, well, you know, the events in my life process are of the same order as, you know, more collective events, perhaps, you know. You know, you mentioned one event experience you had, and, you know, could it be correlated with something else, and we took a look at that.
Mm.
You know, so we don't know that yet, but that's certainly one of the things that I think one has to look at.
Right,
down
right.
the line, for sure.
All right. Well, what do you think about, and this may be a little bit of a left turn, but I don't think so. There have been a number of questions that come up about holographs. Is a holograph and the idea of a holographic universe and these ideas related perhaps to what you're talking about?
Okay, let's kind of define what that might mean. You know, hologram simply means that, well, it means several things, but one of the things it means is that you can express, you know, 3D data, you know, in two-dimensional form. But also what you have in hologram is an image that you can cut into as many pieces as possible, and each, you know, subsection of that larger image still contains an entire image.
Hmm.
The only thing that happens as you get smaller and smaller pieces, the image becomes more and more fuzzy.
More fuzzy.
More out of focus.
Right, less clear. Okay.
You know, is this similar? Possible. I mean, certainly, I mean, fractal, you know, hologram has this self-similar feature, right? I mean, basically,
yeah,
no matter how
right.
small of a piece you get, you still get the same kind of pattern. The waveform as it is expressed, you know, is also fractal in nature, which means it has this self-similar feature that you can zoom in on a section of it and basically you see the same or similar pattern. Certainly in that sense, the time wave as it's expressed, you know, is similar to a hologram.
Mm-hmm.
I
just had this image in my head of the old Russian Carillion photography where they'd photograph a leaf and then cut the leaf in half and remove the half of the leaf and then photograph it again and then The whole leaf showed up in the photo.
Well, Terrence had an additional, yeah. Well, that's Terrence had an additional description of how the time wave may be holographic, and I've forgotten exactly how we said it, but something to the effect that, you know, somebody eating a hamburger and somebody's hamburger joint is, you know, equivalent to something that happened, you know, 2,000 years before, and there's that kind of self-similarity as well. In other words, not necessarily comparing, you know, an economic upheaval specifically related to a stock market, but perhaps an economic upheaval related to, you know, something that, you know, has a similar impact. So he, you know, Terrence had some more expansive, interesting ideas that were related to how the time wave or history of time had these resonances throughout history.
Remarkable. All right. Well, John, we got about 10 minutes or so. What should we talk about to wrap things up here?
Well,
maybe some practical stuff. What's on your mind? I guess I want to talk maybe a little bit personal. What's going on? I mean, what do you make of the whole business? I mean, we all have a personal side to this. I mean, you've been following this thing for a while. You've done it for a reason. I mean, think something's going on.
What's going on for me is, I mean, sort of the website that I'm doing is an expression of that. You know, there's a lot of detail that I want to fill in. And I think it's about to get a little more interesting. Certainly this time wave analysis stuff is going to make it more interesting. But on a personal level, my whole life process has been about, I have, you know, these three separate domains on my website. You know, I have the scientific mathematical domain, I have, you know, the mystical domain, and I have the one that's in between that attempts to link it.
Right.
My life process has been about that. I mean, I've been a practicing scientist all of my career, essentially. But, you know, I've also, you know, as I tell so many people, I practice physics science from the place of feeling first and foremost a mystic, you know, and what that means to me is one who has the willingness and capacity to engage mysteries, you know, as mysteries without necessarily needing to understand what those mysteries are ultimately all about, but more interested in how they intersect, impact me, my perceptions, you know, my civilization, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, you know, the domain in between, that's about trying to link, you know, some of what my experience and knowledge of science and physics provides me with how my more mystical experience has unfolded, you know, and a lot of my life has been about that. So, I mean, this whole process for me of exploring the time wave is about using the skills, abilities, perceptions, theories that I've engaged all of my scientific career with these notions that are considered by some people parlor games, to see whether or not we can forge links in ways that are meaningful and tell us something more about the nature of what we're part of and who we are. You know, so, you know, and I think we're, from my perspective, we're at a time, I mean, my life personally right now, I find it phenomenal that I am engaging at such a high level these frontier concepts, you know, that are related to connectedness, you know, integration, loving, at a level that I haven't experienced before. And while this is going, you know, while the most intense challenges of my life are occurring at the same time, it's like I couldn't have imagined a more challenging time, you know, from which to create and bring in these new perspectives and forms. You know, it's been amazing for me. At almost any level.
I concur 100%. I feel very, very much the same as you. In different ways, of course, you know, but my God, it resonates, the things that you say, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we're alone. I think there are lots and lots of people that are that are feeling in this, you know, feeling the same thing, but through their own experience, you know?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you, a lot of people out there, Mike, who are about really expanding consciousness and changing the way we do business, you know, and in a direction of higher order integration, coming together, you know, moving from a paradigm of domination and control to one of cooperation, sharing, and
symbiosis.
Liberation. You know, what we should be about is about liberating one another,
right.
Helping to do that.
Right.
You know,
somebody asked me today. They said, you know, we're talking about the search for the truth, and I said, well, I'm interested in the truth. Yeah, I said, but I'm really interested in freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really interested in liberty and just being as free as I want to be. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, everyone's looking for their truth, but I want to be free. You know.
Well, isn't that how you find, ultimately, isn't that how you find truth? You know, through freedom? I mean, freedom allows one to be open, expansive, and to be fully engaged with, you know, the fabric of the cosmos. And if you're doing that, you know, whatever else is part of, you know, the process is going to happen. But I think, you know, from my perspective, freedom has to be one of the first things.
Right. How can you even attempt to know truth if you're not free?
No. Mm-hmm. No, because you're going to be constricted, constrained to operate in. I mean, you know, and this criticism has been leveled, you know, for a long time. You know, Terence is one that leveled it, I think rightfully so, that, you know, science boxed itself in the same corner that religion has, mm-hmm. you know, and what we really need, you know, is a science that plays with a full deck, you know, and that means,
yeah.
You know, I mean, if you go back to what the real nature of science is, it's really, you know, as I put on my website, it's very much like shamanism, and they're about, you know, both science, physics, and shamanism are about, you know, immersion of oneself in some feature aspect of nature for an experience.
Right. That's the quote. It's the quote I have up on the front page.
Yeah.
For you. Yeah.
And that means remaining open-hearted and open-minded. It means having the capacity to abandon your perspective or theory if it turns out to be out of harmony with what direct experience is telling you.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you know, the way science is run now, you know, you create these institutions and all of this inertia. And so, you know, I mean, even Max Planck recognized this 100 years ago, you know, new ideas are not advanced, I'm paraphrasing him, are not advanced by convincing the skeptic, but funeral by funeral. Now, people and institutions become rigid and calcified, you know, because they want to cling to their pet notions and theories and perspectives and worldviews. We really have to get beyond that, you know, and that's what, you know, freedom will allow us. But freedom also allows us a sense of self-empowerment, you know, it allows us to value who and what we are and be empowered from that place, because I think that, you know, that's essential as well, because it's only from this place of self-worth and empowerment do you have the capacity, you know, to you know, honestly examine your worldviews and theories and abandon them if they're no longer working.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that's I think there's a lot of abandonment in the near future for quite a few people.
Well, certainly, if my experience is any indication, yeah. And I said this to you and other people, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Oh my gosh, it's yeah. I mean, I mean, if there was a dress rehearsal, I have a feeling it's close to over.
Yeah, I think so. Certainly for me, you know. Rehearsal time is over. You know, it's interesting because I just recently finished, no, I'm not quite finished, but essentially finished a major house remodel that started with finding water intrusion and mold in my house. It eventually led to me just gutting my outside walls and doing this major remodel. You know, and, you know, in the midst of it, I mean, I was doing this essentially alone. I didn't have a partner at the time, and it was a hell of a job to do this. And in the midst of it, I'm saying, you know, to whatever, you know, the creative organizing principle of the cosmos is, I said, you know, cut me some slack, you know. You know, of course, the answer I get is, John, you've had about all the slack you're going to get, so get over it.
Yeah, sometimes I like you have no idea how much slack you've been cut.
Exactly. You know? Right, exactly. And it wasn't in a vicious, it was right. Presented to me in a way, look, John, you know, yeah. Come on. It's time to move on and you know, it's showtime.
Yeah.
So
well, it's like, you know, you've said it to me a couple of times, and it's one thing that I've never said on the air, but I'll say it now because I think it's great. You know, regardless of what's happening, something is happening. I think that a lot of us are aware of this, but you told me one time, you know, I'm not exactly sure what's happening either, but, you know, you just got to decide whether you're in or you're out, and I'm in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and that's the choice, you know, and once I say I'm in, you know, I accept what comes. It's like I'm at the table, okay, you know, what are the hands that I'm dealt? I play them, basically, and move on.
Yeah. All right, well, cards are being shuffled. Actually, they've been shuffled for quite a while, and I think they're about to get rolled over. So
yeah.
That and maybe the apple cart, too. So,
yeah.
All right, Dr. John, well, it's about that time, so I will say thank you so much.
So thank you. You're very, very welcome, Mike. It's just wonderful having this conversation with you, and I hope other people have enjoyed it as well.
I imagine they have, and we'll get it up on the web, and I'll be in touch. We'll do it again for sure, okay?
And thanks, my friend. Thank you very much.
All right, everybody, the wonderful Dr. John Sheliak on the web, John Sheliak, JohnSheliak.com. You'll be able to link there from here on out from my site as well. We did an earlier program in February you might be interested in checking out, and this one will be up on the web within a day or so, okay? All right, one more time. Wonderful stuff. Thank you so much, Dr. John, and we'll be in touch sometime in the near future, okay? All right, everybody else, thank you all for listening. Always the time goes by so quick, and I'm sorry if we didn't get to questions that you may have had, but I think we got a nice chunk of stuff in about the time wave and the new work that Dr. Sheliak is doing. And like I said, we'll be able to continue the conversation with him in the future, all right? Okay, next week, join me, please. It's an important program, and I'm talking to John, too. Everybody out there, I need a lot of support, frankly, on this one that's coming up next week. His name is Boyd Graves, and he deserves the attention that I'm trying to raise for the show next week. So we'll have some great music. I'm not sure what yet. I'm trying to come up with something appropriate. And anyway, between now and then, have a great week. Stick around. We got Ruth coming up with Crash Landing. How else are you going to follow up this program other than with a crash landing? So we have some good music coming up for the next few hours. Ruth will do it up in a few minutes. And I'll finish one off, or I should say I'll finish things off with another song here from Joel Kraft. You've been listening to music throughout the program tonight from Joel, a CD released last year on Blinking Light Records, and the CD is called Big Ideas. And this last one I'm going to play is called Hymn for Sal. All right? Yeah, this is it. Hymn for Sal. And that's H-Y-M-N, not H-I-M. All right, I digress. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. Stick around. One more time, Ruthie, Crash Landing in just a minute. In the meantime, Joel Kraft. It's been a wonderful evening. Take care of yourselves all. KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.
Sal wandered down to the steel yards and bottom grounds where the docks of downtown press the river, and it's an uncertain space where girders and iron braces like cobwebs and lace bind the twilight. Sal says to you, I think you've a clear view. Will you answer me true? This conundrum. And he uncurls his palm. You can feel his unfolding calm as he sings you a song. He said, I feel so low, and I gave to a strong undertow. Memory leaks and you lose what you know, and I feel so wrong with the righteous and the strong. Canvas stretches for centuries on, and the sky is so wide, like the distance I have inside. I wake up at night and I cry, 'cause I feel so lost, so crossed. And the world's turning blue, the sun has gone out of view, there's an old pair shoes and a corpse of sparrow, and you're a child of the sky, so you take to your wings and fly over towers that rise in steep crescendo, and Sal follows on like a gold ball of crumpled yarn over chasms that yawn, knocking every tower door. But the gods have gone home to polish up all their chrome, and so onward we roam. And I feel so wrong, the distances are so strong. Nothing comes to break my song. My reveal is so deep, violet black over slumbering sheep, with a diamond eye looking over my keep. And I feel so old, midnight comes so cold. The arms of the universe circle and hold in my soul, my soul.